The time is now 9:30. Here we go. We'll start over. The time is now 9:31 on June 30th, and I call the meeting of the Committee on Behavior Analysts to order. This meeting is video hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have been properly notified of this fact and have been supplied with meeting access and instructions, as is obvious today with our whole house of attendees. Miss Mellis, would you please call roll?
Yes, Dr. Davey,
Present.
Dr. Davis Wilson,
Present.
Miss Denton,
Present.
Dr. Race,
Present.
and Dr. Stenhoff is absent. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Miss Mellis. At this point, I'm going to take the opportunity to thank board staff. This is a very hefty agenda for today. We have a very voluminous number of applicants, and there has been a lot of work that goes into getting everyone to the point of having their applications reviewed today, of having matters be addressed and potentially adjudicated as we move through a process. And you know, with limited board staff, it is something that we appreciate immensely. I will also say thank you to my fellow committee members as we move through this for the substantive review that was required of these applications. And in advance, I'll thank Mr. Harris for the advice that he may give today. We'll have an exciting meeting today. So we will move on a little bit to talk about continuing education. The Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners is approved by the BACB as an ACE continuing education provider. So if you didn't know today and you're attending as a BCBA, you can get some CEUs for this. Attending a meeting of the Board's Committee on Behavior Analyst is eligible for continuing education credit for maintenance of BACB certification and for Arizona licensure renewal. To claim this credit, make note of the code words provided hourly throughout the meeting. To report the code words to board staff for purposes of earning continuing education credit, look for the link on the board's meeting page for this particular meeting. All right, now that we have gone through a few of those just housekeeping matters, we will move on to agenda item number 4, which is the approval of minutes. We have minutes to approve from May 23rd, 2023. These are regular session minutes. We have meeting notes to approve from or minutes to approve from May 30th of 2023. These are regular session minutes. And we have meeting note or meeting summary minutes to approve from June 9th. The regular session minutes and executive session minutes. As we move into this, does any member wish to offer a motion or need to recuse from any of these minutes?
Madam Chair, I am recused from the June 9th minutes.
Okay. Given that, I will also note that I am unable to vote on May 23rd. I was not in attendance for that CBA meeting. Any other notes? So, Ms. Pakanon, I know that we had concerns about June 9th session minutes not having quorum, but we do potentially have Dr. Rates, Dr. Davey, and myself. Do we need to push these?
Yes.
Oh, they're still on. Wait, let me see if they're on the agenda that was posted. I can't recall if I was able to modify the agenda. If I remove them from the agenda on a mistaken assumption that we didn't have
It looks like
a
they're, yeah, it
quorum.
looks like they're on the agenda. Approval minutes 23rd, 30, 9, and 9.
Okay, then we are fine.
Okay. All right. So, does any member wish to offer a motion to approve these minutes?
So moved.
Chair, can we take them one at a time?
Yes, that was going to be my next question there. So with May 23rd, is there a motion to approve these minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. The motion has been made to approve May 23rd, 2023 regular session minutes by Dr. Davey. It has been seconded by Dr. Rates. We will take a vote at this time. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? Okay, the motion carries. We will move to the minutes for May 30th, 2023. This is the regular session minutes. Is there a motion to approve these minutes?
I'll make a motion.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, the motion has been made by Dr. Rates to approve the May 30th, 2023 regular session minutes. It has been seconded by Dr. Davis Wilson. We will now take a vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? The motion carries. We will now move to June 9th, regular session minutes and executive session minutes. I'm going to assume, Mr. Harris, that we can do those together. Or would you like those separate as well?
Could we please? Thank you.
We can do separate. All right. So we will go for June 9th, 2023, regular session minutes at this point. Does any member wish to offer a motion to approve these minutes?
I'll make a motion.
All right. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. The motion has been made by Dr. Rates to approve the June 9th, 2023 regular session minutes. It has been seconded by Dr. Davey. We will now take a vote. All in favor of approving these minutes, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed?
Okay. Am I recused?
You're recused, yes. The motion carries. We will now move to approving the minutes for June 9th, 2023. These are the executive session minutes. Does any member wish to offer a motion to approve these minutes? Not everybody all at once.
I'll make a motion.
Okay, is there a second?
I will second.
All right. The motion has been made by Dr. Rates to approve the June 9th, 2023 executive session minutes. It has been seconded by Dr. Davey. We will now take a vote. All in favor of approving the executive session minutes from June 9th, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? All right. The motion carries, acknowledging that Dr. Davis Wilson is recused from this vote. All right, I think that's all of our minutes. So we can move on to...
Madam Chair, if I may, I do have a question for Mr. Harris. So if I could make a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of legal advice.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, the motion has been made by Dr. Davis Wilson to go into executive session for the purpose of receiving legal advice. This has been seconded by Dr. Rates. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? The motion carries.
Madam Chair, just give me a moment. I want to make sure we have a lengthy list to select from for the breakout room. So I just want to make sure I'm getting everyone. Oh, there we go. Mr. Harris, 1, 2, 3, 4 members, and I will join.
I always feel like a preschool teacher counting. Is Mr. Harris back?
I am looking for him. I don't see him in the waiting room. I wonder if he clicked the wrong button and left the meeting. Let's give him a moment to rejoin. There he is. Okay, perfect.
All right. We are resuming open session at this time, and I would like to make a motion to rescind the motion for the June 9th regular session minutes and executive session minutes due to these items not being posted on the public agenda. I would recommend that these are moved to a future agenda so that those can be publicly posted. Is there a second to my motion? We need to vote on this, yes. Yes.
Okay. I'll second.
Okay. I have moved that the motion be rescinded for the approval of the June 9th regular and executive session minutes. This has been seconded by Dr. Raitz. All in favor, say aye.
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 And I will still remain recused.
Do it. We have quorum for this, yes? Okay, great. Okay, all opposed. Okay, the motion carries. All right. We will move on now to agenda item number 5. We've got the meat of the meat and potatoes here. Agenda item number 5 is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation to the board pertaining to the approval of behavior analyst applicants. We have a full list today. I will move through each applicant. We have a lot of people on today, so.
Yeah, Madam Chair, practically speaking, I don't know how effective sort of, you know, prioritizing or triaging the applications based on who is present. I'm not sure how successful that's going to be. You may elect instead just to stick to the sequence of the agenda. It's entirely your discretion, though.
I do believe I will stick to the agendatized order. I think that would make my fellow committee members happier than me jumping from here to there to here to there. Mm-hmm. All right, we will start with applicant number 1, Nayeli Casas. I hope I've pronounced that name correctly. Dr. Raitz, you're the lead on this application. Will you take it away?
I will. Thank you. So the applicant comes before us today having received their certification in August of 2021 and completing a master's degree at Pepperdine in December of 2020. Supervision all occurred at Centuria between the time frame of September 2019 and June 2021 across two supervisors, both in good standing, for a total of 1,715 hours. Supervision was in California and Arizona, but again, both supervisors in good standing, and I did not see issues. Would recommend that this application be moved forward to the full board.
Thank you, Dr. Raitz. The next applicant is Taylor Sanders. I am the lead on this application and will review the applicant's information here. This applicant passed their exam on March 14th, 2023, after graduating with a MS in psychology with a specialization in applied behavior analysis from Capella University in March of 2021. The supervision ranged from September 10th of 2021 to February 3rd of 2023. All supervision occurred under licensed behavior analyst in the state of Arizona for a total of 1,706 hours. I do not have any concerns with this application and would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for approval. Right. The next applicant is Larissa Fears. Dr. Davey, you're the lead on this application.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Dr. Davey, I apologize. And Madam Chair, you guys are moving really quick, which I'm excited about. But I do need to note that I am recused from Taylor Sanders and Larissa Fierce.
Do you have any, do you just want to list out any recusals now so that we, yeah. Why don't we just get them on the record right now?
Let me pull those notes real quick. So Taylor Sanders, Larissa Fierce, Teresa Torres Verdugo, that's applicant number 13. Applicant number 20, Gabriel Salas. And I believe there's Nassim Rahimi on number 26.
Board staff, did you get all of those recusals? Okay, excellent. Any other recusals that we should just go ahead and note?
Madam Chair, I too am recused just from one. It's applicant number 14, Lindsay Boccia. I hope I did not mispronounce that name.
Okay. Any other recusals that should be noted before we continue on?
No, Madam Chair, but I will just make a note that applicant number 6, Kelly LeBlanc, works for the same organization as I do, but I have no direct supervisory obligations to her and feels if I can be unbiased during her review.
Excellent. All right. We will move on now back to you, Dr. Davey, for Larissa Fierce.
Thank you. Ms. Larissa Fierce became a board-certified behavior analyst in March of 2023. She submitted her application through our online portal. Everything was done correctly. She has listed her, responded no to the variety of questions we asked with regard to her fitness for duty here in the state of Arizona, and provided us a multiple supervisors from the single organization list. All supervisors that were here, and this was in the state of Arizona, were licensed at the time and in good standing. And so this one should move forward to the full board for approval.
Excellent. Applicant number 4 is Nancy Luke. I am the lead on this application. Ms. Luke passed her exam in February of 2018 after graduating from the University of Cincinnati with a Master's of Education and an emphasis in applied behavior analysis in April of 2017. Supervision ranged from September of 2015 until July of 2017. All supervision occurred in the state of California, which does not require licensure. There were 1,500 hours that were provided. This applicant is also licensed in Texas and has been licensed there since January of 2022 and is in good standing in Texas as a licensed behavior analyst. The only issue that I noted on this application is on page 9 of the application, where one of these supervisors, Katie Richards, noted that she was licensed in California and California does not require licensure. I would recommend that we just reach out to this supervisor and see if we can get this most likely typographical error corrected. And potentially this could move forward to the full board for approval if we can get that supervisor to make that modification before the full board meeting next week. If that can happen, I do recommend that it moves forward to the full board for approval. So board staff, that was Katie Richards, her verification form for the applicant. Okay. We will move on to applicant number 5. This is Alice Okamoto. Dr. Rates, you're the lead.
Yes, thank you. So Alice comes to us having received her board certification in February of 2023. Also having received a master's degree from ASU's program in special education in 2020. Supervision occurred between June of 2019 and July of 2022 for a total of 2,000 hours. Supervision did occur in North Carolina under two individuals, both in good standing. meeting and both meeting the requirements for licensure. So I did not see issue with this application and would recommend that we move it forward to the full board.
Mm-hmm. Applicant number 6 is Kelly LeBlanc. I am the lead on this application. This applicant passed their exam in August of 2015 after graduating in May of 2015 from Simmons College, now Simmons University, with a Master's of Science in Behavior Analysis. Supervision ranged from October 18th of 2013 until April 30th of 2015. There were 1,500 hours that were completed of supervision. This applicant has been licensed in Massachusetts since 2016 and is in good standing. I do have one area that will likely need to be addressed. Supervision occurred in the state of Massachusetts under Chrissy Borowski. Chrissy received her Massachusetts license after the supervision period occurred. With that being said, we do require that if the applicant is receiving their supervision in a state that requires licensure, that they receive supervision from a licensed behavior analyst in that state. I would like to issue a fair to ask for an explanation of why supervision occurred when the supervisor was not licensed. I think there's a possibility that there could be an explanation. I am aware that Chrissy Borowski was staff at Simmons University. And I don't know if that supervision occurred through the university at that time. So I would recommend that we reach out to the supervisor and the applicant to find additional information of why supervision occurred while the supervisor was not yet licensed.
Madam Chair, the timelines in question, licensure went into effect in 2015 for the state of Massachusetts.
Okay.
So there would have been a lag, probably like just this year, of being able for the state to ramp up to provide licenses.
Is there a date on that as far as what month?
Madam Chair, our research reflects that legislation was passed in 2013, and to Dr. Davies' point, the effective date we have is June 5, 2015.
Yeah.
Okay. So my concerns are rescinded. With that information being in place, the supervisor did not have to be licensed at that time, since the supervision experience ended in April of 2015, which would have preceded the date that Massachusetts required licensure. As a result of this, I rescind my recommendation for a fair, and all other information appears to be the necessary information to meet the requirements for licensure in the state of Arizona. And I would recommend to the full board that this moves forward for approval. Applicant number 7 is Julie Pierce. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you are the lead.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Pierce passed her exam in March of 2023. She graduated with a master's in education from ASU in May of 2022. She holds a teaching license in good standing in Arizona, and she has completed 2,000 hours across 2 licensed behavior analysts from the periods of February of 2021 to December of 2022. I reviewed her application, and I do not see any concerns. I would recommend that it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Applicant number 8 is Catherine Londrigan. Dr. Davey, you are the lead on this applicant.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Catherine comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona, listing that she has been a board-certified behavior analyst or my notes are slightly off. I don't think that that's the correct number, but we'll go back. She's also listed as has a license through the Department of Education for previous state she works in. She did provide some additional information with regard to her BCBA certification that was missed in the portal. The teaching certificate is in good standing with an expiration in June of 2031. And the BCBA documentation is also in good standing. Have no concerns about this applicant and would like to see this one move forward as well.
The next application is applicant number 9 for Terry Griswold. Dr. Rates, you are the lead on this application.
Thank you. So the applicant comes to us having received their board certification in December of 2021, as well as a master's degree at the Chicago School for Professional Psychology in October of 2021. Supervision all occurred at CARD in California for a total of 1,528 hours. The applicant did respond yes for question 4, and having reviewed the information that stemmed from an incident in 2004, all conditions were met and there's been no further incidents reported. So with that, I would recommend that we move this forward to the full board.
Dr. Rates, you're also the lead on application number 10, Tatum Jones.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This applicant received their board certification in February of 23 and completed a master's degree at ASU in May of 2022. Supervision occurred between November of 2020 and February of 23 for a total of 2,231 hours. This was across multiple supervisors, all in good standing. And again, I didn't see an issue and would recommend that we move this forward.
Excellent. Application number 11 is Devin Boas. Dr. Davey, you're the lead.
Having been a behavior analyst for quite some time serving in California, the information that was provided led me to just a couple of questions. Board staff reached out to Mr. Boas as his most current employer that was listed had an ending date of May 6th. And so I was just interested to know if the individual was still employed as a behavior analyst. And he did confirm that, yes, he has a job in California. Working with another agency. So that information was provided in a timely fashion. And thank you to Z for reaching out and making that happen. Supervision for this individual occurred all in California, so no issues there. BACB certification has been in effect since 2019. And I would move this forward to the full board for acceptance.
All right. Application number 12 is from Ashley Stevens. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the lead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Stevens passed her exam in March of 2023. She does hold a teaching license in good standing in Arizona. She completed a master's from the University of Arizona in special education in 2017 and then went on to complete their ABA certification in 2021. Certification program in 2021. She did do over just over 1,500 hours between the periods of December of 2020 and December of 2021, and that was from a licensed behavior analyst in good standing. I have no concerns with this application, and I do recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. We will move to application number 13, Garissa Torres-Verdugo. Dr. Davey, you're the lead.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Application was completed entirely, responding no to all of her declarations. individuals in good standing with the BACB. There was one typo that I've noted, and it's not any cause for concern, but I will point it out to board staff with regard to the multiple supervisors of one organization form. Supervisor Sarah Lamone's date of initial licensure issued is missing the final number. Upon review of other documentation that staff provided, that number is 2020. And that's available through just a look at her license verification for the state of Arizona. All the documentation is in perfect order, and I would move this forward to the full board.
Application number 14 is Lindsay Bouchia. I am the lead on this application. Let me get to the right section. All right, Lindsay passed her exam on March 14th of 2023 after graduating in December of 2022 with a master's in special education from the University of Arizona. Supervision ranged from June 1st of 2021 until December 23rd of 2022. Supervision occurred for over 2,000 hours by Arizona licensed behavior analysts. There are some concerns that I have with this application, and I would like to review some of those concerns at this time and hear from fellow committee members. Is Ms. Bouchia present on the call today? I do not see her. Okay. This applicant reported yes on a couple of the items that we asked for on the application, specifically that there has been a DUI that the individual was found guilty for in September of 2021. The individual did plead not guilty to this, but did receive that DUI due to the blood alcohol level being above the legal limit. The applicant also marked that they were terminated from a place of employment. She was employed at SARC. She was terminated in August of 2020 due to being accused of billing fraud, specifically billing more services that were actually rendered as an RBT. Repayment of hours paid out to the individual was requested by the company. The individual, the applicant, reports that they did repay those funds. They also needed to mark yes that there was a BACB allegation of violation of the RBT Code of Ethics. This was in December of 2021. Specifically, they noted the ethics codes from the RBT Ethics 1.03, Truthful and Honesty, 1.04, Conforming with Legal and Ethical Codes, 1.08, Recognizing Personal Conflicts, and 1.09, Following Through with All Obligations. The BACB did not provide disciplinary action, but did issue a notice of the complaint. The BACB ultimately delegated the responsibility of addressing this matter with the supervising BCBA who had made that complaint. I do wish that the applicant was present today to answer a few questions that I have. I am ultimately concerned right now about a pattern of behavior. It did happen about 2 years ago. So I would like to know what the applicant perhaps has learned from their experience, what steps they have taken to ensure that they are honest in the services that they provide, that they comply with legal requirements of their profession. I do find it to be relevant that when this applicant transitioned to another agency, there have been no complaints from that agency, and perhaps that is indicative of the applicant turning a new leaf. I'd like to hear what fellow committee members think about this application. I am curious if we could potentially request some additional information to get that, Dr. Davis Wilson.
Yes, Madam Chair, I would say that generally when we've seen applications like this, that we have requested that the individual come before the committee to answer questions. I don't know that any, I mean, we have very thorough documentation in front of us, but I do think that it would kind of warrant being able to interview the individual, speak with the individual, and see if those concerns can be remediated through our conversations with the individual. And so I would be in support of and agree with you that requesting that the individual be present for a committee meeting is necessary. I would like to try the route of asking her to be present, but I know in the past we've done two ways. One is just asking and inviting, and others is through subpoena. And so I would, you know, kind of defer to Mr. Harris and perhaps Ms. Pakanon for which preference they would have there. I would like to see if the individual on the, you know, kind of honor system of being invited to come forward would be willing to without having to subpoena the individual, but also open to whatever is recommended.
Mr. Harris, do you want me to start and maybe you can augment anything that with anything that I've missed, just to basically to affirm, Madam Chair, that what Dr. Davis Wilson described is exactly how we have addressed this kind of situation in the past. It is done through the auspices of a fair. So the fair, you know, clearly indicates, you know, if you're looking for more documentation, it's identified, but it would certainly indicate that, you know, we are requesting an application interview. So that can be done, you know, in lieu of a subpoena, maybe an intermediate step. You always have the option to open an investigation, but I sense that maybe the committee is not quite ready to do that yet. And, you know, perhaps an invitation through a fair to appear before the committee to answer questions, provide clarification. That sounds like a reasonable next step, intermediate step.
Yeah, I like the professional courtesy of that.
I was also wondering if perhaps it might be appropriate to invite a couple of the supervisors from Ally, where she received that, not that it would be required, but all of her supervision experience occurred under Ally Pediatric Services, and perhaps they could attest to the behavior of the applicant over the last 2 years and remediate some of these concerns.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think Mr. Harris and I are in agreement that that would be something we could extend the invitation for that purpose.
Yeah, we can certainly encourage her to bring her supervisors. If that, you know, again, if that's the consensus of the committee.
Dr. Davey, your face looks like you have some.
No, I agree. I think it's just the invitation. I don't know that there's any more documentation I need. The BACB's documentation is fine. The information on the email from SARC, I don't feel like I want to subpoena any of those documentation. So I think, you know, given this was, you know, 2+ years ago in terms of the falsified billing documentation, which, you know, is concerning. I think a discussion with what has come from that misstep on her part and where she's been going since then. Obviously, the BACB felt that there was good reason to allow her to continue on her path to become a board certified behavior analyst. So I think having that discussion with her would be warranted.
So with that being said, I will summarize that for board staff. I do recommend that we supply a fare to the applicant, specifically inviting them to the next meeting of the committee to answer some questions related to the past 2 years and changes in behavior that perhaps have been noted. I would also like to invite the supervisors who supervised the individual at Allied Pediatric. And let me grab those supervisors if that is helpful for you.
They're listed on 44, page 44 on the fieldwork verification form for board staff.
Yes, yeah, so that would be Jennifer Vasquez, Jamila Amora, Alma Staheli, and I hope I'm pronouncing these names correctly, Gabriel Demby, Kennedy, and Allison Ring. I don't know that we need a full house by any means, but if someone could come and speak on behalf of the applicant, I would appreciate that. And that is my recommendation.
Thank you very much.
Discussion from committee members? We will go ahead and move on to applicant number 15. Applicant number 15 is Alexander Reichsfield. I am also the lead on this application. Here, let's see, let me make sure I've got this here. Mr. Reichsfield passed his exam in March of 2023 after graduating in August of 2022 with a master's in special education from Arizona State University. Supervision ranged from May of 2021 until January of 2023. Receiving over 2,000 hours from multiple supervisors at one organization, all licensed in the state of Arizona. There was one supervisor whose license and certification has gone inactive voluntarily, but that license did not go inactive until after the supervision experience under that supervisor occurred. So all supervisors were licensed and in good standing. I do not have any concerns with this application. Oh, but perhaps Dr. Davis Wilson, you've got your hand raised.
No, you can continue on this one. It'll be for the as soon as you finish.
Okay. I do recommend that it moves forward to the full board for approval. Okay. You're raising your hand, Dr. Davis Wilson.
Yeah, sorry. I am trying to get the timing right, get it quick before you move on. I am going to just make a statement with the applicant number 14. I've been racking my brain because her name sounds very, very familiar to me. When I reviewed the application, there was nothing about the application that stood out as familiar to me. However, I do believe that this is an applicant that did attend one of my classes several years ago. And I think what threw me off on it is that her graduating university is not the same university I teach at. I think the individual withdrew and attended another university. But I did just want to note for the record that there may have been a time in which she attended a portion of my class. I do not believe she attended the entire semester. I was looking to see the passport picture that's not in the applicant file. I'm really going off of a hunch of the name, but I did just want to note it for the record that I do believe I at one point may have been an instructor of hers. But I'm comfortable moving forward because, like I said, other than the hunch in my stomach, I the rest I don't recall.
Okay, thank you. All right, well, you can just keep talking, Dr. Davis Wilson, because you are the lead on applicant number 16, Ashley Matamua.
Fantastic, thank you, Madam Chair. So Ms. Metamua passed her exam in March of 2017. She did graduate from Ball State University, which is another university that I do teach at. However, I started teaching there in 2018. So she graduated in 2015. So I can say that she probably was not a student of mine. She did do just over 1900 hours from May of 2014 to November of 2015. And that was in California where licensure was not required. I've reviewed her application. I don't see any concerns. I do recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
Okay. Applicant number 17 is Daniela Roman. Dr. Rates.
Yes. So this applicant comes to us having received their board certification in November of 2022. Additionally, they received a master's degree and a certificate at Capella University, with the master's degree occurring in 2020 and their certificate in 2022. All of their supervision, excuse me, occurred between February of 2022 and March of 2020 and March of 2022, for a total of 2,000 hours. Supervision did occur in California under the supervisors, Daniel, Lori, and Helena, both in good standing, and licensure is not required in California. I did not see any issue and would recommend we move forward.
Applicant number 18 is Grace Smith. That one is for you, Dr. Davey.
Thank you very much. Ms. Smith completed her application completely and thoroughly, was actually, and holds a license to be a behavior analyst in the state of Utah, which is also in good standing with the BACB as well. In reviewing the application, noted that the supervisor had selected yes to having a relationship with the individual while they were under supervision. I'd reached out to board staff who was able to get a hold of the supervisor and clarify that that should be, in fact, a no in terms of that selection. And they've uploaded that documentation for the entire committee, should they want to look at that. That's number 11 of the supervised work experience or independent field work verification. So it was an error on the supervisor's part and has been rectified via email. And so I feel as if this one can move forward to the full board.
Ms. Malice, would you perhaps like to offer a code word?
Yes, Madam Chair, but I wanted to comment on the previous applicant. I was trying to wait for Dr. Davey to finish on that.
Okay.
Question.
Oh, is go that ahead. The yeah. applicant, Daniela Roman?
This is for Lindsay, number 14.
Okay.
I received an email from her that she is joining the meeting.
Okay.
And I can do the code word.
Is there any chance that one of her supervisors from Ally might be able to join spontaneously today as well?
Madam Chair, if I may interject, you could, I mean, obviously you haven't taken any action on with respect to this application today. I believe you have the latitude to decide if she joins the meeting, if you want to have the discussion with her. But Mr. Harris, if the committee feels that, you know, they want to, you know, notice her through a fair for the next agenda to have an interview, they may still elect to table the application if they feel the timing is more appropriate for the interview to happen on a future agenda, correct?
That is, Heidi, and what I would recommend if you really do want to hear both from the applicant as well as her supervisors, that when she appears this morning, you just let her know that the committee is going to continue this as they would like to, you know, hear from both you and, your supervisor or supervisors to further review the matter.
I I mean, I think my question as far as if we could get one of her supervisors here today, like I would rather not delay an application and push it off. You know, we need as many behavior analysts in the state of Arizona as we can get. You know, if she's able to join today and someone else is able to join, I would very much be interested in that. Dr. Davis Wilson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I would in many cases agree with that. I think my concern is how thick and hefty this particular agenda is. I think that we do kind of owe it to at least the other 35 applicants to get through their applications before determining whether we have time to then conduct the interviews, because I don't want to be in a situation where we're prioritizing one issue that needs further review and not moving some of these others through, and you know, butting up against potential quorum issues if people have to leave at any specific time, and then we do have additional agenda items that have been kind of ongoing for a couple of months. And so I think, you know, I agree with you. I think if it's something that at the end of the agenda items there is time for, like and we have quorum, I just don't want to risk the other 35 applicants not being seen today. Well, I mean, we're way past all 35, but getting through the rest of the applicants today.
I think that's a really valid point. Ms. Pakenham?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also think that maybe some consideration needs to be made to, I want to ensure that we afford this individual all the due process that she is entitled to. And so, you know, a fair letter would represent, you know, what she needs to be aware of with respect to due process. So I'm a little concerned about, you know, calling her before, you know, in an interview when she hasn't had opportunity to, you know, maybe she would have elected to retain legal counsel or those kinds of issues. So that's just another factor that I'm raising for the committee to ponder.
Okay. It's a very good one too. Okay. Ms. Malis, would you like to give the code word now?
Yes, Madam Chair. The first code word is independence. Thank you.
Independent, as in I am an independent person, or as in independence is coming up on the 4th of July?
The 4th of July.
Okay. Gotcha. Independence.
Is that with an E or an A on independence? So I'm gonna misspell that, I'm sure.
Okay. Let me recall which applicant we are on. Did you finish Grace Smith, Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
And I just wanted to thank Ms. Malis for reaching out to her, as well as to Devin Boas, and being able to get that information so we could move forward. So thank you very much, Ms. Malis.
Excellent. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yeah, I do see that Lindsay from applicant number 14 is on the line. I do want to make sure that that we just close the gap and just let her know that, you know, to Mr. Harris's point, that we have reviewed the application and we are going to request additional information. And that is going to be in the form of an interview with the applicant, as well as a supervisor. And so the board staff will be in touch with The board staff will be in touch with the applicant in the very near future with further information.
And just to inform the applicant, we are interested in speaking to a supervisor who oversaw your supervision experience. So that would not be a supervisor from SARC.
Okay. Madam Chair, I believe we are on number 19.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. You're the lead on applicant number 19, Judith.
That's really the only reason why I knew that. All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is going to be for applicant number 19, Judith Turner. Ms. Turner passed her exam in August of 2019. She had graduated from George Mason University in 2018. She is licensed in good standing in Texas, Nevada, Utah, Virginia, Washington, and Tennessee. She did complete 2,000 hours between 2017 and 2019 across two LBAs in Virginia. One LBA, I did note, was not licensed from October to January, October of 2017 to January of 2018. However, even in removing all of those hours that could have possibly been the maximum hours that could have possibly been in place, the individual would have still met the 1500 hour requirement. And as a result, because it even if we took all of the hours per month required, it would have been 390. As a result, would have still met the 1500. And therefore, I do believe that this one can be forwarded to the full board with a recommendation for approval.
Applicant number 20 is Gabriel Salas. I am the lead on this application. Mr. Salas passed his exam in March of 2023 after graduating in May of 2021 with a Master's of Science in Applied Behavior Analysis from Arizona State University. His supervision ranged from August 2020 until February of 2023. He received 1,511 hours in a concentrated fieldwork experience. By Arizona licensed behavior analysts who are in good standing, I did not note any concerns with this application and would recommend that it moves forward for approval by the full board. Okay, the next applicant is applicant number 21, Maria Concepcion Jevetsky. Dr. Davis Wilson, I hope you pronounce that name the same way I did.
I am going to go with yours and say Ms. Javetsky did pass her exam in October of 2022. She did graduate from Purdue University in 2021. She did complete 2,000 hours between the period of March of 2020 and July of 2021, and that was in California where licensure is not required. I reviewed her application and I do not have any concerns. I do recommend that it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
Let me look at that one, because I believe there was a supervisor whose supervision training might not have been in effect during supervision. Did you see that, Dr. Davis Wilson?
I have that noted on another one of my applications, but I don't have it noted on this one. Let me double check. But there is an upcoming application that has.
I'm reviewing to make sure I didn't just put my notes in. That is a different application. Okay, comment withdrawn. Okay, application number 22. Is Akwasi, and I see you're on the line today. I'm so sorry if I mispronounce your name. Owusu Dunko. I am the lead on this application, and I will move forward with this review. This applicant passed their exam on March 8th of 2023 after graduating in December of 2020 with a master's in special education from Arizona State University. Supervision ranged from September 1st of 2020 until December 27th of 2022 by licensed behavior analysts in the state of Arizona. There were over 2,000 hours, specifically 2,224 hours of supervision that occurred while in Arizona. I don't have any concerns about this application. I would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for approval. Okay. The next applicant is applicant number 23, Sarah Brixius. Dr. Reitz, you're the lead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This applicant comes to us having received their board certification in February of 2020 and a master's degree at ASU in December of 2019. Supervision occurred across two supervisors, both in good standing, all in Minnesota, which does not require licensure, and that was for a total of, check my math, 1,698 hours. In review of this application, I didn't see any issue and would recommend we move it forward.
I would like to just note for a moment here that we have reviewed 23 applications in the last hour. Like, way to go, committee. I'm excited by this. Applicant number 24 is Shelby Shields, Dr. Davis Wilson.
Yes, so I apologize. Ms. Shields did pass her exam in April of 2023. She completed a master's from ASU in December of 2022. She did 2,000 supervised hours with multiple licensed behavior analysts. I do note that there is a slight date discrepancy on the application. So her supervised field work appears to have gone from October of 2021 to April of 2023. On the application, it's page 10, where it asks about the supervisor Brooke Savitz's supervision start date. It looks like she may have put in her certification date and expiration. And so it looks as though that date and the supervision date are different. And so I know that changing that might be difficult, but if we could get that clarified for the record, we would just want that. Again, it's page 10 on the PDF. It's under supervisor details, Brooke Sievit, supervisor start date, June 26, 2020. The supervision start date on the supervision form is October of 2021. And then that end date is actually in 2023, not 2024. So if we could just have that clarified. Everything else looks good, and I have no other concerns. So other than just the clerical error, I would recommend that this be forwarded to the full board for approval once that's corrected.
Madam Chair, do you want me to sort of address how we are going to facilitate those kinds of situations now that the portal process doesn't allow an applicant to re-enter the portal for purposes of making corrections? What we will do is we will request and accept and upload to the portal an addendum for any correction that the committee, you know, identifies as necessary. That is part of the public record, so applicants should be cognizant of that fact. But because we can't undo what is already submitted, that's what their records will reflect.
Okay. And I do see that this applicant is on the line today. Do you have any questions about what will be coming from board staff and what is needed from you?
No.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. Okay, we will move on to the next applicant, number 25, Jose Portillo. Dr. Reitz, you're the lead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the applicant comes to us having received their BCBA in May of 2022 and completed a master's at ASU in August of 2021. Supervision occurred between July 2020 and October 2021. All supervision occurred in California for a total of 1,645 hours. There were multiple supervisors, and in reviewing each of those, it appears they met the requirements. So I did not see any issue with this application and would recommend that it move forward.
Thank you, Dr. Bates. We will move on to applicant number 26. This is Naseem Rahimi. I am the lead on this application. Let me make sure I've got all my documentation up here. Ms. Rahimi passed her exam in April of 2023 after graduating in December 2020 with a Master's of Special Education from Arizona State University. Supervision occurred from March 1st of 2021 until February 15th of 2023 under multiple supervisors at A Brighter Avenue. This is an agency in Arizona, so supervision did occur in Arizona. All of those supervisors appear to be licensed in the state of Arizona in good standing. Supervision occurred for 1,616.75 hours. I did not note any concerns with the application and would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for approval. I always look at everyone else's faces right after just to make sure there's no hand raises and go through that. So excuse my pause while I look for faces. All right, application number 27 is David Hurdle, Dr. Davis Wilson. This one goes to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Mr. Hurdle did pass his exam in September of 2020. He completed his master's degree from Ball State University in 2020 as well. He received supervision from January 1st of 2020 to my notes are off. It's dated from January 1st, 2020 to August 24th, 2020 from multiple supervisors that were in Georgia. However, if you look at some of the documentation, it does appear that supervision may have started as early as July of 2019, although it's not clear as to which dates are the accurate dates. So there are forms that state that it started in July of 2019 and extended through August of 2020. But then there's other documentation that says that it started in January of 2020 and went through August of 2024. I do recommend that board staff issue a FAIR to seek clarification on when supervision did occur, as supervision would not be able to count if the January 2020 date is accurate. He would have needed to start that supervision sooner. And so I don't know if it's a clerical error that can just be resolved, or if a fair would be a more accurate. I guess we have Mr. Hurdle here, perhaps, right? I think we did. Perhaps mm-hmm. He can provide some clarification to his supervision dates.
Yes, ma'am. I do believe it's a clerical error in this case. So I would be happy to kind of resend whatever document it is or reach out to those supervisors to address that paperwork issue.
Do you recall when your supervision started, Mr. Hurdle?
Sorry, ma'am. Could you repeat that?
Do you recall when your supervision started?
I don't have the forms in front of me at this moment. No, ma'am. I apologize.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Pakenon, would this be another situation where an addendum could be uploaded?
You have two options. You can treat this as if in your judgment, this is a matter that can be corrected, through a, just exchange of information from Mr. Hurdle to board staff. We could handle it that way. Or as Dr. Davis Wilson indicated, your other option is a FAIR. So that's a more formal request. So it's really up to you. I think in this case, you know, it could potentially go either way. If the documentation reflects it's something other than a clerical error, you know, then that's an instance where, you know, we would want to put this application under additional scrutiny.
Madam Chair, Ms. Paknon, perhaps, or Ms. Malice. So if you go to page 8 of our PDFs, what it looks like is that perhaps he didn't list the both experiences, but he submitted all the documentation for both experiences. And so to me, the application is complete and can be forwarded to the full board. There's just the clerical issue of page 8 only reflecting one of those experiences. And I don't know if he can add the second experience since it isn't a change, but more of just an addition, or if there's something else, but I'm okay with this being addressed as just a clerical issue. I think the file in and of itself meets all of the requirements.
I would agree with that, Dr. Davis-Wilson, particularly since we have the final experience verification forms for both of those experiences that do detail that supervision occurred starting in July of 2019. So I appreciate that. Mr. Hurdle, I see that you would like to be acknowledged by the committee. You can unmute yourself.
Yes, ma'am. Only after hearing you guys say that is exactly what happened, where I realized I hadn't submitted both forms. And then I followed up with an email later on clarifying that second experience. So I think that's exactly what happened here.
Okay. Dr. Davey?
Yes, Mr. Hurdle, thank you for being on here. I actually had this application noted to just ask the committee to maybe ponder this question. And since you're here, you can help me understand it. But it appears that you've been operating here in the state since about February, correct, in your current position?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so just with regard to that, in terms of kind of waiting for that licensure period, you know, since that's been about 4 months or so, you know, just wondering, like, you know, under what kind of supervision you've been provided as you, or if you have been serving clients here in the state.
Yes, sir. So in my time here, I've worked exclusively as an RBT. I've never provided any form of BCBA supervision or any other activities that could be billed under the 971 codes. It's all been as an RBT.
Very good. Thank you very much, sir. I have no further questions.
Fantastic. Well, it is very helpful that you are here today, Mr. Hurdle. I think this will help your application to move forward quickly, so there does not need to be a FAIR, which is an additional request for information that delays the process typically. So thank you for being here, for being able to answer those questions. So board staff will communicate with you in order to get that addendum uploaded so that we can have the correct information. And hopefully with this information promptly addressed, we can have your application reviewed by the full board for potential approval next week.
Thank you, ma'am.
Absolutely. Let's see here. We are now on application number 28, Catherine Massal. Dr. Davey, you're the lead.
Thank you. Ms. Massal comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona. She is a board-certified behavior analyst and has been since 2017. Completed all of her, provided us with all of her information with regard to her experiences. Most of that occurred, almost all of it occurred in Canada. And so in terms of supervision, everything looked solid there. We also provided some information around their transcripts, which I thought was also helpful, just kind of looking at it from an international standpoint. With regard to the verification form, all information there was signed off by her supervisor in Canada at the time. And I have no concerns about this and would like to see this move forward.
Application number 9 is Alexandra Zachary. This is back to you, Dr. Reitz.
Yes. So if the committee recalls, this is an individual who applied for licensure and was short 169 hours due to a supervisor who was not licensed in New York at the time. We extended a letter to provide additional supervision, and the individual was able to do that. So they have provided an additional 175 hours, have submitted that documentation. It is by a licensed behavior analyst here in the state of Arizona. And so it appears that they have met the requirements that we put forth in our original request. With that, I would recommend that we move this forward.
The applicant is on the line today, and I want to say thank you for addressing the deficiency and going through that and making it a simple process for us to get through and get you licensed. You are nearing the end of your licensure journey, and I'd like to congratulate you as this moves forward to the full board for potential approval. Thank you. Applicant number 30 is Sabrina Wishart. I am the lead on this application. Okay. Ms. Wishart passed her exam in March of 2023 after graduating on May 13th of 2020, which just for the record is my birthday. So congrats on passing your exam on my birthday. Anyway, after receiving their Master's of Special Education from Arizona State University, supervision ranged from July of 2021 until April of 2023 for a total of 1,545 hours, all by licensed behavior analysts in the state of Arizona who were licensed at the time of supervision. I do not have any concerns with Ms. Wishart's application and would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for approval. Okay. Applicant number 31 is Jessica Camacho, Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Camacho passed her exam in what appears to be March of 2023. She did complete a master's degree from U of A in 2022. It appears that her supervision period went from May of 2021 to March of 2023 across two different supervision sites and four different multiple supervisors. In review of the application, I did note several clerical errors as well as some discrepancies in supervision requirements. The first one's going to be related to the date of certification. According to the application, the certification date is listed as 2020. I do believe that this is in relation to the RBT certification. So if you go to page 9 and 10, rather than reporting the BACB or the BCBA certification, the applicant reported their RBT status, which was active from 2020 I believe, current, and listed the RBT certification as their certification type, which we do not license RBTs. We do have the verification from the BACB that this individual is a certified behavior analyst as of March of 2023, but again, the application does not reflect that outside of that verification. In looking at the supervision, there were two distinct starts and stops of supervision across two sites. The first one was from May 1st, 2021 to September 5th, 2022. There were three supervisors listed. Of the three, I noted concerns with the eligibility of supervision for two of the supervisors. For Lauren, it does appear that she was not eligible per the BACB to supervise until November of 2021. She was not licensed in Arizona until February of 2022. For Pauline, she was not eligible to supervise until July of 2021. She was not licensed until August of 2021. So I do, I did not note a multiple supervisor form in the applicant's file. I'm not sure if perhaps Ms. Malice, you received one. Those dates, I think, are really important to ensure that the hours were done under an eligible supervisor. But it was unclear to me what the start date of Lauren was and the start date of Pauline was, because per the form, it just lists as May of 2021. Another supervision period was started September 6th of 2022 and continued through March of 2023. And that was for 682 hours. My only concern with that particular piece, and it's probably me just being picky, and probably not a huge concern, but the original form that was submitted to Ms. Malice was incomplete, and I just want to note that the verbiage of the rule that accepts the behavior analyst, the BCBA form does say it must be the form that was submitted for the original application to sit for the exam. And so I just want to note, that either A, I mean, we have a completed form and I'm fine with that, but either A, the original form is not what we received, or B, the incomplete form was accepted by the BACB. But I, again, as it stands today, we have the form. I think that that's fine, but I did want to note that. So my recommendation on this application, short of Ms. Malice, potentially having a multiple supervisor form, would be that that we issue a FAIR requesting specifically the edits to the certification type and those dates, as well as requesting clarification on the start dates of each individual supervisor.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. I do see that I believe the applicant is present. Would you like to address the committee?
Yes. Hi. So the form with the multiple supervisors, Olivia Shaw was my primary supervisor, and the other supervisors were the other supervisors in clinic. So they were added to my form as well.
So did Olivia Shaw provide the entire 1500 hours of supervision? Or did Lauren and Pauline also provide supervision hours?
Can you repeat the question, please?
Did Olivia Shaw provide the full 1500 hours of supervision?
Just at that location, yes.
So Lauren and Pauline did not provide any supervision?
They did. But once they were licensed, they did. So, but Olivia was the primary supervisor for my time being there.
Okay. So what my request is going to be is that board staff do reach out to you with kind of a breakdown of the information that we need, because we do need the actual, from your supervision records, what exact date Lauren and what exact date Pauline started for that supervision. My recommendation would still be that we would need that information in order to consider this file complete.
I believe on my form it does have the dates on there.
Dr. Davey?
I'm good for right now. I'm looking for those dates. Like, I just have some general concerns about the application as well. I do think the multiple supervisors form should be filled out to kind of guide us through who was involved, when and where. I understand that Ms. Brown may have been the primary supervisor, but the BACB documentation clearly lists other board supervisors. Also a little concerned with regard to the verification form that was shared with us, to Dr. Davis-Wilson's point earlier. And so I think a fair is appropriate. And I don't feel as if the answers on the spot here are going to most likely satisfy my desire to see this and prepared by the applicant to put back in front of me.
Ms. Pekinon, or board staff here, do you feel that you have the necessary information to issue this fair?
Madam Chair, I do feel comfortable. I would also want to make sure Ms. Malice is, because typically she'll compose the fair. I may or may not be involved, but Ms. Malice, are you clear on what the committee's direction is?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
I just wanted to seek clarification from Dr. Davey. As far as, because again, I noted that second form as a concern as well. Are we wanting board staff to include that in the fair, that we need the original form that was submitted to the BACB?
I believe so. Like, I believe that there's, like, the way that it's presented now just leaves a lot of questions with regard to whether or not that was fully completed and was the actual form that was transmitted. And so I'd like to see the one that was transmitted, since this is the source that they are providing to us for licensure.
And another option would be the board supplied form, correct? If they decided, you know, if for some reason that was not able, the original form was not able to be obtained for some reason, there's also another pathway where you can complete a verification form through documentation that's supplied by the board to have each individual supervisor sign off on the dates that they provided that supervision. Okay. So, any further discussion on this before we move to the next application? Okay. Applicant number 32 is Abigail McCarthy. Ms. McCarthy is assigned to me. She completed her exam in November of 2017, after receiving a Master's of Arts in Applied Behavior Analysis from Ball State University in May of 2017. Supervision ranged from November of 2015 until June of 2017 in the states of Indiana and Florida. There was a decent chunk of hours that were completed in Indiana. At that time, whenever the supervision was accrued, supervision or licensure was not required in Indiana. Licensure went into effect in Indiana in 2021, which means that there is not a concern that the supervisors who provided supervision in Indiana were not licensed. There was an additional 841.5 hours that were completed in Florida, which does not require licensure. The total number of hours for this applicant is, oh, I have to sneeze, 1,671.5 hours. I do not have any concerns with this application. I would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for approval. The next applicant that we will look at is number 33, Jennifer Nackrud. Dr. Davey, you're the lead.
Thank you.
Did Dr. Davey freeze?
It appears he did.
he looks very pensive. Perhaps what we will do right now is move on to the next applicant and come back to this one while Dr. Davey tries to remediate his connection issues. We will move on to applicant number 34. I am the lead on this application, and hopefully Dr. Davey will rejoin. Applicant number 34 is Alicia Link. Ms. Link completed her exam on September 14th of 2022 after graduating in March of 2022 with a Master's of Science in Applied Behavior Analysis from National University. She received her supervision in the state of Ohio from May of 2021 until July of 2022 for a total of 1,874 hours. This individual is a certified Ohio behavior analyst since September of 2022. They are in good standing. Supervision occurred by licensed, by certified Ohio behavior analysts who were licensed in the same state that supervision occurred in, given the good standing of the supervisors and the applicant and all of the application needs being met and articulated, I do not have any concerns with this application and would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for approval. Dr. Davey, I'm so glad to see that you have joined us again. Your face looked so stoic whenever you froze. I thought you had great concerns.
I did not have great concerns. I was trying to get, I don't know, but Zoom crashed, but I think it's back up. So life is good.
Excellent. We will resume application number 33, Jennifer Nackrud.
Thank you. Ms. Nackrud comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona. She has a master's degree in special education from the University of Colorado. She provided all of the information and then also an additional master's degree that I wanted to note from Regis University with a focus in nonprofits. All information here is complete, in good standing with the BACB since 2020. Colorado does not have licensure, and so the supervision that took place is in line with our statutes. I would like to see this one move forward for full consideration by the board.
Excellent. Okay, we have finished all of agenda item number 5A, and we'll move on to agenda item number 5B, which is behavior analyst applications for licensure via universal recognition. The first applicant is Joy Pollard. Dr. Rates, you're the lead.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I do want to note that I have worked with Dr. Pollard a few times, but I feel I can review this application without bias.
I would make the same disclosure that Dr. Pollard and I have worked together probably in 2019 and 20, maybe a few times since then, but feel as if I can review this application without question.
Do you have that too, Dr. Davidson?
I do. committee work and larger kind of national work that's not directly related to or influenced by any decision on this application.
I do feel left out.
Well, now that you'll be licensed here.
Do you too, Mr. Harris?
No, but I have not worked with Ms. Pollard, but I have noticed that Jean Galvin has joined us. Oh. So if it's okay, I'm going to excuse myself and wish everybody a good rest of the meeting and a very happy and safe holiday.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Harris.
Thank you.
Okay.
Welcome,
Jean. Great. If you are comfortable moving forward.
Yes.
Have at it.
Happy to do so. So I have reviewed the application. The individual does have an active license in Texas, also an inactive license in Hawaii, and was also at one time licensed in Alaska. All of those were in good standing. There appears to have met all of the requirements, including proof of Arizona residency. I didn't see any issue with the application and would recommend that we move it forward.
Yeah. No, I just make the statement that the state of Arizona will be in a stronger position to have Ms. Pollard licensed here in the state. She has done some excellent work and nationally with regard to telehealth services and as a subject matter expert in the area. And so welcome to Arizona, Ms. Pollard.
Yeah, very, very happy to have her.
Okay. We will move on to the next applicant for universal recognition. This applicant is Alicia Anson. Ms. Anson graduated from Walden University and St. Joseph's University with her finals graduation date being February 15th of 2015. This individual is licensed in Maryland, in Virginia, and Texas for over 1 year. All of those licenses are in good standing. They have established residency in Arizona and provided evidence of that residency. I do not have any concerns with this application and would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for review and potential approval. The last applicant is Christina McGinnis. This is you, Dr. Davey.
Yes, thank you. I reviewed Ms. McGinnis's application through Universal Licensure. She fits the criteria receiving this path. She has provided us with utility bills. She has also provided us with information around, or we obtained licensure information that she's had a license in another state in good standing for over a year in a state that aligns with our statutes and rules. And so I would like to see this move forward to the full board as well.
Fantastic. We have finished all applications. Oh, wait. Can we have a comfort break after we do 5C?
Sure.
Okay.
Keep rolling.
Let's do 5C. And then I did have the intent to do a comfort break, Dr. Davey. I wanted to like preemptively beat everyone to the punch. Like I wanted to get. Okay. Try. We will move to agenda item 5C. 5C is request for approval for telehealth registration. Dr. Davis Wilson, you are the applicant. Or you're not the applicant, you're the lead on this applicant, Leah Friedman.
Yes, so Ms. Friedman is requesting to join the telehealth registry. She has provided us information pertaining to her licensure in New York. She has attested to all of the questions related to practicing in Arizona. She does work for a multi-state organization, but has attested to all of the applicable requirements to meet the registry. She does not have any noted concerns in the discipline registry or with her current license, and I do not see any concerns with moving forward with allowing for her to have a telehealth registry license or beyond the telehealth registry here in Arizona.
Dr. Davey?
Yes, I was just wondering if maybe Ms. Packman, just will you briefly just walk us through what benefits come through registering through this telehealth registry?
Madam Chair, certainly, Dr. Davey. So in 2021, the legislature enacted a series of statutes essentially expanding service delivery through telehealth. So there are professions whose practice acts did not authorize them to practice in that manner. The new statutes did this. They also established, you know, consistent requirements for providers who elect to deliver services or care through telehealth, what needs to, how you conform to those, what need to be met. So as a part of that process too, the telehealth registry was established. The original legislation said, hey, if you're licensed in another state and you just want to practice into Arizona, go for it. And then that was sort of modified to create what is, I call our practice authorization. We've been really, really clear and careful, as reflected by what Dr. Davis Wilson was articulating. This is not a license. We don't call it a license. It is not congruent with a license. So it is simply an authorization to practice into Arizona. You have to meet certain qualifications identified by the statute, but you're held to the same statutory standards that anybody who's licensed is. And so one thing that we have discussed, and staff ensures this is communicated on the website when someone is applying, in their approval letter, that again, this is not a license, this is a practice authorization. And so it is not, it does not equate to a license in the sense that you can provide supervision. And we make that clear by citing 322091.03. Mm-hmm. What, any other questions you have?
Yeah, so with regard to the attestation, you know, there's several things that are attested to within the submission, right? And so one of those is the, I agree to follow the state standards of care for the particular license or health profession for which I'm registering. The second one is I affirm I will not open an office in Arizona except as part of a multi-state provider group that includes at least one healthcare provider who is licensed in this state through the applicable healthcare provider regulatory board. So is it our assumption, like, they're not asked to name anyone? Do we just take it on good faith that this is an agency that's operating here and therefore we would assume they have someone that is licensed as a behavior analyst within their organization or within their practice here in the state of Arizona?
Madam Chair, Dr. Davey, we don't present that question to the applicant. So we essentially, if you're looking at the statute, there's a series of requirements under subsection A. And then what you just read is under subsection B, which are two preclusions to practice. So I can ask Ms. Galvin. So when we crafted the application, we were careful to, you know, make sure that our application was reflective of what we're authorized to ask in the statute. Yeah. It may be, I don't remember this conversation, I could ask if Gina remembers, if we explored whether posing questions about these preclusions, whether we were, the statute authorizes us to ask them or not. My recollection is the statute really doesn't.
And I would agree with that.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yeah, I wanted to speak to just a couple of things, points of clarification. So Dr. Davey, I think that because I've explored very similar concerns, I do think that because the statute would then apply to or be subject to interpretation by all the health plans, then I would imagine that there's going to be avenues in which folks may struggle to actually become contracted with health plans if they don't have that licensed person. And then again, kind of they're attesting to not doing this. And so the consequences of, you know, misrepresenting or, you know, reporting something inaccurate to the board, you know, would be there. My bigger concern is around the aspect of the technician, because this does not grant authority for a technician to practice ABA in Arizona, because in our statutes, a technician is excluded from licensure because they're being supervised by a licensed behavior analyst. And so I do have concerns, and this is something that that I've brought up to the full board. I do have concerns that folks may misunderstand that and think that their supervisory services or services to the technician is sufficient enough. And that's not what this would technically allow. And I think if you look at some of the other professions like physical therapy and physical therapy assistants, it's very clear that like a physical therapy assistant cannot practice in the extended authority of a registered physical therapist. And so I do think for our field, this is going to be really confusing because to what benefit, you ask what benefit this has. Well, if I translate that kind of to our field, perhaps someone could do some assessments, someone could do some case consults, perhaps somebody could provide individual like 97153 administered by the BCBA themselves via telehealth. But I would argue that the RBT or supervising the RBT or the extension of the RBT being able to provide the services would still require that licensed individual. And so that would be the other area in which an agency with multi-state practice would have to be cautious of, is if they're saying like, oh, hey, I've got BCBAs in the registry, we'll just go ahead and have them supervise this case. Well, I do foresee a concern that now those technicians are no longer practicing under that exemption of you must be practicing under a licensed behavior analyst.
Yeah, I mean, I know we've, Ms. Packanon, sorry, I didn't even raise my hand, I apologize.
Ms. Packanon.
Well, I would love for Dr. Davey to respond to that, because I just wanted to raise one other thought. For the committee.
Dr. Davey, back to you.
I don't know that I have a response, Dr. Ms. Wilson, but I know the reason we have this, and I understand the reason behind this from the pandemic. We've seen, I don't know the exact number, but we've seen very few registrations on the behavior analytics side, right? I mean, a handful since the lifting of the, let's say, the more stringent restrictions around the pandemic. Heidi can probably give us the exact number, but I just have concerns on, in general, all providers, not just as providers, just as providing the opportunity for the discussion, that the creep around, the clinical creep around what they're actually going to be providing. I mean, very clearly on our website, I agree, it pulls out the point of what you can and cannot do. It clearly points out the questions around the ability to supervise trainees. And, you know, it goes right back to our rules. My concern is, you know, the definition of a supervisee, you know, to Dr. Davis Wilson's point, is an RBT who could be, you know, is also under supervision, right? So what's the intersection there? A supervisee could be someone who's obtaining hours to be able to become a licensed behavior analyst. And we are not going to allow that because they don't hold the license. And so I just get a little nervous as to the individual that's going to come forward with someone like this applicant signing off on an hours or signing off on something that they didn't fully understand. And so I, in some ways, almost would rather speak to this individual and invite them here to talk about what they believe these services are going to be and how they're going to be staying within the guidelines of this, and that they fully understand the rules by which they are bound by not only state rules, but our own statute. So I think I'll stop there.
Dr. Davis.
I don't disagree in kind of theory. I think it could set an awkward kind of precedence. And then we do have some others that have come through that we haven't, mm-hmm, held, you know, that for. But I share those concerns with you. And I do know that we do have AZABA representatives here on the call. And perhaps this is, you know, another add to the to-do list with coordinating with stakeholders and making sure that they are aware of our concerns around this so that they can get in front of educating the members and the member agencies as to what this telehealth registry allows for in practice and what it would not allow for, and just kind of take us out of that kind of that role, because I do think it starts to kind of mess with what our role and the limitations of it are.
There are so many hands up right now. I feel like I should acknowledge Ms. Galvin, because I feel like that might be a direct response to what Dr. Davis Wilson was saying.
Yes, and thank you. I do believe we're getting away from the agenda item. I know that this application kind of prompted this discussion, but I think we are veering into a full-blown discussion of what this means and possible implications.
Okay. Ms. Packanon? You're still muted.
Pardon me. My suggestion is that we put this matter on a future meeting agenda, and because we have a relatively small number of one or two authorizations that have been granted, a few more handful of applicants with open applications. We can, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's a total of 6 individuals. So we can invite those individuals that, you know, to attend this meeting, where we have this matter on the agenda for purposes of, you know, awareness about what this authorization constitutes and what it does not. So if you want to give me that direction, I will make sure it's on the next agenda or whenever you tell me.
I, for one, think that that would be a prudent path.
I do too. Okay. So as far as the registration for Leah Friedman, Dr. Davis-Wilson, did you note that this is good to move forward to the full board?
Yeah, I share Dr. Davies' concerns, but I do think in light of what the statute says and what the applicant has produced, this application should move forward to the full board with a recommendation for approval. And again, that is not to to dismiss the concerns. I think there are several, not with this application, but with the whole thing in general. And so I do, I think I've the last couple of months have been hoping to get this on an agenda item because I share very similar concerns to Dr. Davy.
Yeah, I agree. Nothing with this applicant. I think the discussion next time is fine. I don't know about inviting everybody to it. I mean, I'd be happy to listen to what they have to say. But I do think that, you know, a better understanding of the number of people that we currently have. Do they have to re-register every calendar year, Heidi? Is it, or is it a singular, like once you're in kind of thing on this? I forget if there's a re-attest after the fact.
Yes. So okay. Unfortunately, we don't have the statutory authority to require a renewal. So this is, as I read the statutes, this is a perpetual authorization. They are required every year to provide a report of patient contact. And I can't remember all the components of that report. I'd have to look at the statute, but board staff, you know, we've only recently, it was only October 1 of 2022 that we opened the registry. Took a while to receive any applications. So it will be a while before we sort of see what happens in terms of those reports. We're not sure if we're going to say, here's a report, a format, we want it this way, or if we just say, it's your responsibility to comply with the statute and we can't give you any guidance in the process. There's some things that we still need to figure out. So I think November, December, this issue is going to come back before the committee and certainly the board in some capacity. I think we're going to see some issues.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, you've seen enough supervision issues that this one now is warranting, you know, fine, we've got 6 people through, we have yet to see a report that is, you know, it's not outlined of like what the report needs to be, but under 36, 3606, it clearly states that yearly we're supposed to receive an activity update from these individuals and what mechanisms those are going to look like. So yes, I, long way of saying like, yes, let's put this on an agenda. I don't know that I want to talk to all 6 people right now, but happy to, if other committee members think that's going to be helpful, as you know, or if this is like a 2-part discussion, you know, get our education around it and have Ms. Galvin give us some guidelines based on the law, and then maybe that'll help better focus our questions to those that are on the registry.
Dr. Davis-Wilson.
It would be my preference that the second part be done with the association leading education efforts. I just worry that the conversations would be very hypothetical in nature if we had everybody come forth, and I would hate to compromise a future like complaint or concern. I think if it comes down to like these concerns really are significant to educating, I think that's where it needs to stay. I think that once we call 6 and we have that conversation, then then how do we gauge others that may or may not be coming, and how do we determine that? And so I would like to see a more sustainable kind of avenue for supporting those that are pursuing this.
Agreed.
So
we need a motion on the six, or is it just into the applications?
I figured we would do the applications and get those underway. And then we'll, I'm not sure where to go next, but let's start with applications. Ms. Malice, first, will you provide a code word? Because we're at 2 hours.
Yes, Madam Chair. The next code word is fireworks.
Fireworks. Thank you. I love it. Okay. And then if you'd like to unmute yourself again, perhaps, and provide a summary of the applicants so we can know who does what and what is needed, and make a motion in accordance with what you say.
Yes, Madam Chair. So summary, everyone is moving forward to the full board, except the following three people have edits to their application, and that is Nancy Luke, number 4. There's an edit with Katie Richards being licensed in Arizona. She checked the box incorrectly. An edit for Shelby Shields, number 24. Sorry about that, my fan. So number 24, on Shelby, there was an issue with the supervisor start date on page 10. The next edit is for David Hurdle, number 27. In terms of just Chelsea, her dates of supervision start dates on the application. There is a fare for Lindsay, number 14. And basically, we want her to come in front of the board with supervisors to explain things like changes in behavior, steps she's taken regarding the incident that she had where she checked yes on the application for those questions. The other fare is for Jessica Camacho, who's number 31. And it has to do with Lauren and Pauline and those dates with being licensed in Arizona.
Excellent. Okay.
As well as needing a multiple supervisors at one organization form for her. And we also talked about having the original form that was submitted to the BACB, because there was an edit with that end date on the verification form.
Okay. Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yeah, I just have a procedural question for Ms. Galvin. Ms. Galvin, because I have recusals on this agenda, I just wanted to refresh my memory. It would be your preference that I not make a motion or second, but that I would be able to vote, noting my recusals.
Correct.
And I bring that up because I know Tisha is chair. Sometimes it's weird to vote, but because Dr. Rates has recusals as well, you guys might want to consider that.
Okay, so we've got two people who can make a motion and second, and I do see that an applicant has raised your hand. I'd like to move through this motion before we acknowledge you. So I will go ahead and move that we take the actions noted by Ms. Malice throughout her review forward to the board. Dr. Davy, would you perhaps like to second that?
I will be happy to second that.
Okay. I have motioned that the applications move forward as directed. Dr. Davy has seconded. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. All opposed? Nay. The motion carries. Jessica, I think your last name is Ms. Camacho, so I apologize. I usually say Ms. Would you like to address the committee?
Yes. So my question is, what multiple supervisors form is being requested? Because my forms are the multiple supervisors at one organization, and on both forms, I have multiple supervisors.
Ms. Pakinon, I see you.
Yes, Madam Chair. Board staff will get with you. We this isn't the opportunity to sort of sort through this right here, right now, but board staff will follow up with you as quickly as we can to facilitate what information needs to be obtained and exchanged.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pakanon. We will go ahead and move into a comfort break before we move into agenda item number 6. If everyone can plan to be back by 11:45.
Yes, and I will just make the statement that as we move, yeah, I guess it's 6. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
See okay. you. Perfect.
Madam Chair, I'm here. I'm going to turn off my camera while I get some snacks.
I might have been thinking about the same thing as we move through this. It's a hungry day.
Did you bring enough snacks to share with everybody?
I don't know how we're going to share digitally unless it's like future, like Meet the Jetsons. I just.
Well, I could always have DoorDash just, you know, show up at a Starbucks.
I was thinking. Multiple orders.
That sounds wonderful. Dr. Davis Wilson, are you back?
I am.
Okay, fantastic. We will go ahead and resume. 11:46. Dr. Davy, did you want to make a motion regarding the telehealth registry, or would it be appropriate to save that for a future agenda item down for a future?
Yeah, just I don't think we need a motion. Just want to make sure it's on the agenda.
Okay.
I move that we understand it better.
All right. We will go ahead and move to agenda item number 6. Agenda item number 6 is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding the recommendation to the board regarding license reinstatement requests submitted by Elizabeth Bennett. Dr. Davy, you are the lead on this agenda item. Would you please provide the committee with a review of this item?
Yes, thank you. Ms. Bennett is seeking to have her license reinstated. She has gone through the proper course of action in submitting her reinstatement. She was granted her license, I believe it was, licensed on March 11th, 2022. That license expired December 31st of 2022. At the time of that expiration, the license was in good standing. Board staff worked with the applicant and appears to be able to identify the number of CEUs that would need to be created or completed in a prorated fashion to bring her license current. The individual submitted more than enough hours, even with the exclusion of a CEU that happened outside of that time frame to be able to have the reinstatement occur. I saw no issues with the request, and all the information was provided. And I do believe that the only other thing I noted was just that on question number 2 of the background information, are you currently licensed? Oh, no, that was, are you currently licensed or certified as a behavior analyst? For number 3, she should have marked yes, as she is still has a, if she still is a board certified behavior analyst, which I assume that she is. So that was my only comment on that.
So do you have a motion, Dr. Davy? Is there any discussion? I guess we should see. Is there any discussion?
Now that I say that out loud, I guess the one thing I just assumed I probably should double check is that maybe board staff can just do it real quick to make sure that she is in good standing with the BCDA with a quick search of their registry. And then other than that, I'd be good to go.
Madam Chair, Dr. Davy, sure. I would delegate that to Ms. Malice if she doesn't mind, so I can be attentive to the committee for the next agenda items if you need me.
Very good. I'll make the motion that pending a pending confirmation of Ms. Bennett's BACB certificate being good standing, that this be moved forward to the full board.
Is there a second?
I will second.
Okay. The motion to move forward to the full board for license reinstatement for Elizabeth Bennett. It was made by Dr. Davey. It was seconded by Dr. Rates. Is there any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? Nay. The motion carries. Agenda item number 7 is consideration, discussion, and possible action regarding the recommendation to the board related to the license reinstatement request submitted by Ingrid Lucas. Subsequent request to withdraw application, have fee refunded, and possible recommendation to open a complaint for unlicensed practice. Dr. Davis Wilson, you are the lead on this agenda item. Will you please provide a review of this agenda item for the committee?
Yes. So Ms. Lucas has submitted or had submitted her license reinstatement request. Her license expired in March of 2023. She did continue to provide services in April, unknowing that her license had expired. She did have a supervisor that she was meeting with during the time of that unlicensed practice, which was attested to by the supervisor and provided to the board. The time frame for the reinstatement request was allowable, and so the staff have forwarded it to us because of the information pertaining to the practice during the time that her license was expired. Since this time and since subsequent conversations with the licensee has decided to move out of the state and is wishing to withdraw her reinstatement request. And with that is also requesting a refund of the application as well. The board staff did note the kind of substantial amount of correspondence that was necessary to get this reinstatement application to where it is now. And so I would ask that we take that into consideration when reviewing circumstances as to whether or not the fee would be reimbursable. But that is my summary at this time.
Do any committee members have questions for Dr. Davis Wilson?
No, just that I would agree that, you know, the adjudication of this request was well on its way, you know, at the 11th hour, essentially it's asked to be pulled. I don't know that the refund is warranted. I know we do have some precedent where we have allowed people to request a refund for various reasons. So would defer to board staff on how they'd like to address that. But this is not something that, you know, something that was put in error or something that, would, I think, require us or even compel us to want to provide that reimbursement. But I'll defer to Ms. Packenham.
Ms. Packenham?
Thank you, Madam Chair. To address Dr. Davies, what I heard was the question. So the circumstances in general when the board has agreed to refund an application fee has been pretty limited and isolated to instances where it was the wrong application type or, you know, that there was a early recognition in the application process that, you know, the application was submitted, you know, with some sort of an error. I think what is misunderstood, even though the fee is identified as an application fee, it covers the cost of processing the application. The record clearly reflects there were costs incurred in the process of processing this application. It is not a licensing fee. If it were a licensing fee, it would be identified as such in the statute. So submitting the application fee should not be construed to constitute a specific or guarantee a specific outcome, meaning a new license, a renewal of a license. So board staff does, sometimes we need to explain that distinction. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. Thank you.
Does the committee care to receive legal advice in executive session?
Absolutely, Ms. Galvin.
Is that a motion, Dr. Davey?
Yes, so moved.
I'll second that.
The motion was made to go into executive session for the purpose of receiving legal advice. This motion was made by Dr. Davey. It was seconded by Dr. Davis Wilson. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion carries. I'm muted. We're now back in open session. I do see Ms. Lucas, that you are present. If you would like to unmute yourself, you have the opportunity to make a brief statement to the committee up to 5 minutes, and the committee may have questions for you following your statement.
Thank you for letting me talk. I just wanted to tell you my side of the story. Obviously, I have, well, if you can see, I have been in good standing with the BACB for going on 14 years now. I've never had any issues with reinstating my certification. So this was the first time I've ever had a license. I worked in California for 10 years. So I was really hoping that it would be something similar to the certification process, where it would be communicated to me as to when the license would expire. And I also talked to my supervisor and she gave me the same information. So it was a huge misunderstanding, huge mistake that that the license expired. And then I continued to work. As soon as we found out that it was expired, I discontinued work and all of my cases were transferred to other BCBAs. Unfortunately, I was laid off of my position at the agency in Arizona at that time. So I really had nowhere else to go other than look for other job opportunities. And I did get a job opportunity outside of Arizona. And so I will not be practicing with my license anymore in Arizona. And that is why I requested to terminate the licensing process and to request a refund. Obviously, I understand if that's not possible, but I did want you to understand kind of what happened to me and how I ended up in this situation, being that I've been in BCBA for, 14 years and I've been, in good standing with BACB. This is not something that just happened that I just decided I didn't want to, go forward with my, renewing my license. So it's a really unfortunate situation. I was doing a really amazing job with some of my clients in Arizona. And so it's really sad for me to have to leave Arizona and have to leave all my clients under these circumstances. But I do appreciate you giving me the time to talk and kind of hearing my side of the story. And obviously I understand whatever conclusion you guys have come to. But thank you for letting me talk.
Thank you, Ms. Lucas. Do any committee members have questions for Ms. Lucas? Dr. Davey? You're still muted.
I have a question just with regard to the period of time from the expiration of your license here in Arizona until you recognized that you had been practicing in Arizona without an active license. Like, do you have an understanding of number of clients that were served during that period, hours of service that were provided during that period? Kind of like, what was the extent of kind of the time frame in question where you did not have an active license in Arizona?
I don't have any specific numbers. As I said, my agency laid me off, so I had no access to my calendar and all the hours that I had provided. I know that it was my daughter's birthday that I found out that I had no longer had a license. It was May 10th. And that's all I know. And as I said, I have no access to any of my client materials or any information regarding anything to do with my clients. So I couldn't even provide you with that if I wanted to. So I'm so sorry.
Ms. Pakenham?
Madam Chair, Dr. Davey, if the decision is to open an investigation, the board would have the authority to subpoena some records to inform the investigation. So even if Ms. Lucas doesn't have access to those, of course, you know, we can obtain those to, you know, inform the outcome of that investigation.
Is it my understanding that essentially her license expired May 10th of 2023? That's when she reached out with an email to the board, or that's when she reached out to the board, was on May 10th?
Madam Chair, yes. I believe that it was a March 31st. So we're talking about, you know, about six weeks of practicing while unlicensed. Yes, March 31st.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yeah, I guess this question is for Ms. Lucas. For April, and I think this might be kind of why Dr. Davey was asking about the caseload amounts, is because in the month of April, there was a clinical director that was overseeing components of your work. What's not clear is like how much of those components. So it, you know, was the 2 1-hour meetings sufficient for your caseload to be able to determine that? So on a broader level, are you able to kind of summarize what your responsibilities were and about how many clients you were seeing? I know you don't have the specific details, but I do think it's pertinent to kind of what has been attested to as being under supervision.
Yeah, I think I was seeing between 10 and 13, 14 clients in April. And that my supervisor met with me twice just to go over specifics regarding the cases and the supervision that I was providing to the RBTs. But the supervision was only like 2 hours for the entire month, I believe.
But supervision nonetheless. Okay.
Yes. Just oversight of my caseload. And my
Dr. Wilson, am I looking at the right document in terms of page 15, which is the email from the supervisor, right, that she's attesting to having occurred in April?
Yes.
Okay.
And then that would bring me kind of to my next question of, you know, you were notified. Well, let me ask first, what date were you laid off from the organization?
The next Monday. So that was a Wednesday, and then they told me on Monday the 15th that I would no longer be employed with them.
Okay. And the reason for the dismissal was the licensure?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So then for the month of May, between, you know, because this supervisor is attesting to April, for the month of May, from the 1st to the 10th, did any supervision or meetings with the supervisor occur?
I don't believe so. But again, I don't have my work calendar that had all of my appointments on there. And so if we met the Friday before, that would have been so, but I don't have anything to look back on to confirm or deny whether or not we met in May.
So is it a kind of a reoccurring standard process to meet with the clinical director?
Every other week, yes.
Okay, thank you. That's all of my questions.
Just in terms of the agency's decision to to part ways with you as this is occurring. To Dr. Davis Wilson's point, like standing supervision meetings with a clinical director, it sounds like that was standard practice for you every 2 weeks, give or take. Is that a fair statement throughout your entire tenure with this organization?
Yes, sir. There were a couple months where she was only able to meet with me maybe once, but yeah, typically every other week.
And then with regard to when they notified you this, what did the handoff of clients look like? Did you have a meeting to be able to discuss the clients you were working with, where they stood? Was there some sort of wrap up with regard to services?
Yeah, May 10th, I transferred all of my cases to all of the different BCBAs that we'd be taking them. I met with the BCBA. I went over all of the clinical details, discussed the RBT situations. Yeah, so I spent about an hour with each BCBA going over each and every client and all the RBTs, and that was done on May 10th.
Ms. Galvin?
Thank you. The committee may want to decide whether they have enough information to make a referral to the board to open a complaint or to not take action on the apparent time period where she practiced without a license. And once that recommendation is made, we would consider the request to withdraw the application, understanding that that request may have to be addressed after the board determines whether to open a complaint. But we are kind of winding down the road of an investigation when there's no open complaint. But I do understand you're trying to get information.
Dr. Davis Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Galvin. I agree, and I apologize if it, you know, was going that way. I think it really just comes down to, at least for me, whether or not that letter over that month of supervision is enough to suffice to take no action. And at this point, I think because there isn't a statutory definition for supervision, there's a definition for supervision towards licensure, but there's not a statutory definition for caseload supervision. I think, you know, we have a supervisor here but in the letter that has said, yes, I did supervise her work. And as soon as we were notified, everybody, you know, made sure everything was appropriately transitioned. And so I welcome thoughts from other committee members, but I think, first, for Ms. Lucas, this, you're not the first. This has been, you know, a year of us having, you know, multiple individuals in this exact same kind of predicament. And so I think kind of looking at how we have adjudicated those, I do kind of lean towards taking no action.
Dr. Davey?
Madam Chair, I tend to agree. I think that in this case, you know, we've gone down this path before where we look at the supervision piece. We've already proactively got a statement around, you know, a month of that time period. We've got a statement with regard to regular scheduled transition or supervision meetings. We've got a discussion of case handoff occurring around clients being moved. I just don't see this rising to the level of us having enough I don't see any issues here that rise to a statutory violation, and I don't think that we should put this in front of the board as such. I, for one, am around no action at this point, and then we can move on to the license. I'll put that in the form of a motion, if that's what's needed.
And I would second that.
The motion has been made by Dr. Davey to take no action regarding opening a complaint related to the unlicensed practice of Ms. Lucas in the state of Arizona. It has been seconded by Dr. Davis Wilson. Is there any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, we'll take a vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion carries.
So that is a recommendation to go to the board to take no action. You would then want to consider whether to allow her to withdraw her application and issue a refund. And those also would be in the form of a motion and a recommendation to the full board.
Absolutely. So I'll go ahead and make that motion that we allow for the, as part two of this, to allow for the withdrawal of the application. But at this time, I do not see probable reason to be able to provide the refund. That'd be my recommendation to the board.
There a second?
I'll second.
The motion has been made by Dr. Davey to recommend to the full board to approve the request to withdraw the application, but not to approve the request for a refund of the application fee. It was seconded by Dr. Raitz. Is there any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, we will take a vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion carries. Okay, Ms. Ingrid, you will be notified of the date of the full board meeting by board staff. So if you would like to be in attendance for that meeting, just note that every decision that is made here at the Committee for Behavior Analysts is a recommendation to the full board, and any decisions that will be made there at that meeting. Okay. We will move on to agenda item number 8. Agenda item number 8 is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation to the board relating to the inactive license renewal application submitted by Amada Tro, a subsequent request to withdraw application, and possible recommendation to open a complaint. This is also you, Dr. Davey. What was the last one you? I can't remember. We've all spoken. So that was Dr. Davis Wilson. Okay. If you would please provide a review of this agenda item for the committee.
So if you remember last time, we were going to hear this as part of the committee, but instead, I believe the individual ultimately did not maintain attendance in the meeting. And as it turned out, we pretty much determined that we needed more information anyway, so it worked out to that point. We've got more information now. So March 13th, board office receives a notice from Ms. Trow to inactivate license renewal application, which expired on March 31st, 2023. The license has been voluntary and active status since April of 2021. What comes to light through the information that's provided here is one, that there was a complaint to the BACB with regard to detrimental supervision practices, signing off and attesting to particular activities having occurred for someone who was trying to become an RBT, when in fact those activities did not occur. BACB found it to be a threat to consumers as well as to the certification, and therefore moved towards revoking her license. That went to an appeal. BACB stayed with their early decision to continue to have that license revoked. They did allow that after 2 years, if she wanted to sit for the exam, that she would be eligible to do so following a certain set of rules with in terms of for those that have had a license revoked. So from there, we get to the point of filling out the application here in the state of Arizona, where it is not identified that she has been involved in a complaint process with the BACB, and the application is in many ways incomplete with regard to that. Individual has been in contact with the board and responded to further questions. That is available to you. Available to you in your packet. Obviously, I'm guessing you've already, assume you've already reviewed all of that, so I will not spend time going through it. In summary, I've got lots of questions, but I do not believe that the individual is here. And I've got some other concerns with regard to some of her answers from board staff, in particular her response around her New York license. And, you know, I think at this point, my, you know, barring other statements from board members, I would probably opt to go into executive session for the purpose of receiving legal advice from Ms. Galvin.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
The motion was made by Dr. Davey to go into executive session for the purpose of receiving legal advice. It was seconded by Dr. Raitz. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed, nay. Okay. We are back in executive session. Before we continue on with this discussion, Ms. Mellis, will you offer an additional code word?
Yes, Madam Chair. The next code word is holiday. Holiday. Thank you.
Okay, so back to discussion of agenda item number 8. Do any committee members have discussion or motions that should be entertained?
I just had a few with Dr. Wilson. I was just going to give some more comments, but
no, you're more than welcome to lead off, Dr.
No, I think you know. As I was preparing for this discussion today, you know, I had written down several questions that I wish I could ask of the applicant. You know, given the time frames of understanding what had happened with her certification, when she's putting forward her her request for reinstatement, given some health issues that she discloses, like what was the purpose behind her reinstating? What was her thought process? What did she want to do? Was she planning on coming here to practice, knowing that she was in the situation that she is in with the BACB? Was she planning on supervising others telehealth? Like I wanted to understand like what the thought process was in even pursuing a reinstatement with us, given the struggles that she was having with the national certifying body that was going on. You know, in addition, I think I would have asked some clarifying questions around her responses with regard to her New York licensure status. She has an active behavior analytic license there through the end of February 29, 2024. And you know, her responses to us about not informing them with regard to her, the BACB revoking her license around supervisory issues was concerning to me as well. So I do wish that the applicant would have been here today to be able to help provide some information around those decisions on her behalf. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Davey, I actually had almost identical questions. I agree. There's some areas there that are just, there's, you know, things just aren't kind of adding up there. And I had kind of the same areas of interest struck as I was reviewing everything. I'm going to just look, though, at kind of the timeline. And I know the information that is before us. And this is not to say that there isn't a concern, because I do agree that there's a concern. But I also have procedural concerns with how the BACB handled this. And I know that that's probably, again, not a popular opinion. It's not going to be something that, you know, I'm just going to say it, and whatever comes of it comes of it. But I think too, when you look at the documentation and you see that they had concerns in 2016, they presented questions related to said concerns and determined that the only finding they had was that this particular supervisor was not appropriately removing new RBTs from the portal, and said, hey, we're not, this isn't an investigation. This isn't a reportable complaint. In fact, please don't report this as a complaint. And then said, just send us your plan on how in the future you're going to correct this concern we have that your portal looks like you're supervising all these people, yet what you provided for us is many of them are inactive. Fast forward to the new complaints, and I don't want to go in the detail of the complaints, because I agree that there are significant concerns of those complaints. I think my concerns come into the stance of then saying, well, you were provided coaching and support in 2016. So therefore, our only option is to revocate your certification. And I find that to be problematic because I don't see where the coaching was provided. What I see was they had a concern. They asked a question. The individual responded sufficiently. I would argue that it still would have been concerning because nowhere in Florida statute does it say that a licensed social worker has the authority to supervise an RBT. Now, it does say that they have the authority to provide ABA services, but it doesn't say that they have the authority to supervise an RBT. And so I would have still had questions further in 2016. However, the BACB did not. They deemed it to be, hey, your answer was sufficient. So we're gonna call this case closed, send us this information, and that is it. And now they're saying, well, you were already afforded this coaching opportunity, and we've already addressed this concern with you in the past, and that's why we're sticking to a revocation. And perhaps part of it is that the BACB does operate under their own kind of standards, and it's not, you know, statutorily defined, but rather like standards of practice defined. And that's fine. But I think that it kind of muddies it, because if we were to get someone tomorrow come before this board with the same information that was presented in 2016, I have a hard time believing that we would have even mandated coaching, maybe not, I don't know, and then further used that opportunity to stick to kind of a revocation at a later date. So it's not to say that the new concerns aren't concerning. It's not to say that the lack of bringing the revocation to this board's attention as quickly as possible is not concerning, because I think all of that is concerning as well. But I do think that it's also problematic that the BACB also didn't try to contact us. And granted, they may not know where all individuals hold licensure. So this is not a knock on the BACB. I think this is the systemic issue. And we've seen cases before where all they have to do is leave Arizona and go to Colorado, go to California, go somewhere where license isn't there, and still practice behavior analysis. This individual is in Florida, and per Florida Medicaid will be able to continue practicing behavior analysis, and is able to now because she carries a license in social work, and their licensing board was notified, and their licensing board chose to dismiss the complaint. So we've got this really muddied kind of thing before us. And again, it's not even my feet. I agree there's concerns, but I also am very concerned for certificates and their ability to have, you know, their fairness in review of how the BACB is handling these. And I think the BACB is very good about taking these opportunities and creating new processes. I don't know if you guys have seen, but you know, for supervision by a non-BCBA, they now require a form be submitted ahead of time so that they can vet that supervisor. So I do think the BACB is actively trying to get ahead of some of these things. I just worry that it's at the expense of, you know, a revocation that then statutorily ties our hands when there's a lot of unanswered questions, even in the investigative process, which they deemed in 2016 wasn't even an investigation in the documentation. So that's my two cents on that. I am concerned about that. I don't think that it's going to make a difference on how we proceed, but I did want to note it for the record.
Yeah. With that, I think in light of all the information we have, I'd like to go ahead and make a motion that we allow board staff to negotiate a possible solution to this matter with Ms. Tro and her legal representation, if she has that, and that come back with what progress is made that would be acceptable, I think, to this committee as well as the full board with regard to an outcome.
There a second?
I'll second.
The motion was made by Dr. Davey to table this matter so that board staff can reach out to try to negotiate a possible resolution to these concerns brought forth and to revisit this matter. This has been seconded by Dr. Reitz. Is there any further discussion? Okay, we'll take a vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? Nay.
I will be abstaining.
Okay. The motion does carry. Okay. We will move to agenda item number 9. Agenda item number 9 is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding agency performance metric data and potential recommendation to the board to request appropriation increase to augment staffing level. Ms. Pakanon, will you please provide a summary of this agenda item for the committee?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. So unfortunately, had this occurred to me very early in the meeting, what I would have tried to announce in some fashion that we had so many people who are here at the meeting, I'm certain because, their application was on this agenda. And I think it would have been, very beneficial for them to, maybe they couldn't stay and hear this information, but at a minimum, if I had thought to announce, hey, there's some information, there's going to be some robust discussion on this agenda that I think will be very interesting to you and maybe, put some of your own personal experience applying for licensure in a broader context. I wish I could have said that, but maybe our AZABA representatives will help us, spread the word that, this committee is having, we're looking at data and we're trying to make some thoughtful, decisions that are informed by the data. So, and I really want two things to come out of this, this specific agenda item, which is a discussion of, the trends that we're seeing, acknowledgement of those. And then because the process that's involved in making a convincing case to the Governor's Office of Strategic Planning and Budget, to the legislature, that we have the money for additional resources to staff up. That exercise is extremely daunting and this degree of scrutiny is very intense. And so ultimately, I would love for this committee and the board to adopt a motion directing me to seek additional staffing resources just so there's more weight to it. That's not something that I necessarily asked for with our most recent staffing increase, but we were successful. I just think that, we just need to, put that forward if the committee and board are willing just to put an exclamation point on, what is clearly needed. So with that, I will just dive into the review of the data. And some of the data is just to show the display behavior analytic information and data and performance metrics relative to what we're seeing on the psychology side. So attached to the memo, so on page 2 of your PDF, this is the report of the average number of active licensees. There was an interesting, sort of element in 2021 and 2022 in that we had some, temporary, we'll call it inflation of licensees, which were the emergency COVID licensees. So those are illustrated in the yellow and that kind of brownish color. So we didn't have a lot of behavior analyst emergency licensees, but really pay attention to the green section of those bars where, we didn't see huge increases in numbers from 2020 to 21, but, the trend from 2021 forward is extremely compelling. So, and I'm going to be articulating some of this so that it's on the record. Even though, you know, this material is also public record, if anyone's listening, I want them to know that the number, average number of behavior analysts from in 2021 was 619, increased in 2022 to 755, and then a big jump to 2023 of 920. So clearly we are building capacity. No one's claiming that this increase in capacity is meeting the need. It just needs to be acknowledged that we've been called upon to address what is clearly, you know, a demand for licensure. And this reflects that we've rose to that occasion, right? And do you want me to pause there and just give everyone time to react or ask questions with each slide?
I think one of the things that I would note is that 920 in 2023 is 6 months worth of data.
Well, I'm sorry, fiscal 2023. So it's almost 12 months of data. So I should have clarified. I apologize. Fiscal year runs July 1 to June 30th. So skew everything by 6 months.
Okay. I mean, my eyeballs were about to get bigger that was actually going to double.
Yes. And in some cases, you know, what I've done is I've applied a little bit of annualization. So there's a little bit of projection, even though today is the last day of the fiscal year for those of you who celebrate, and I do. But really, I pulled these numbers, you know, a few weeks ago. So the numbers are pretty close.
I mean, I think one, it's exciting that we're having a lot more BCBAs in the state of Arizona to meet the demand, but concern for board staff, for committee members who are tasked with the duty to look through these applications and ensure that we approve licensees who will practice safely in the state of Arizona. So concern, that's my response, concern.
Moving on then, and we can come back to any of these conversations the committee pleases. So the next is depicts the fiscal year, again, July 1 to June 30th, growth in applications. So 2023, you know, slightly annualized since I think I pulled the numbers on or about the 10th of June. Again, we didn't see a whole lot of variation really from 2019 to 2021, you know, not significant numbers. Big jump, 2021 applications 160, 2022 293, 2023 410. So, you know, I'm going to take a little bit more time and, you know, illustrate this in my funding justifications, assuming there will be a request for permission to use our funds to staff up. I'll present these as percentage increases, of course. So questions, thoughts, comments, I can go on to the next slide, which is a detailed graph of this current fiscal year, month to month activity. So I did, in the process of, you know, looking at these numbers, calculate the median and the average, so 25, 26. So you can kind of see, you know, December was kind of a quiet month. And then the story really changed, right? So, you know, February, March, no wonder we are drowning. No wonder, you know, the May, June agendas look the way that they have. I mean, that tells the story. So, you know, I think we are just, the new paradigm is, you know, 30 or more applications per month. What is interesting to me, I think, is that with this profession, it's impossible to sort of predict fluctuations in application levels. Some boards can do that by virtue of when, you know, they know in particular the Arizona schools are graduating, you know, when their cohorts are graduating. So you brace for the tsunami, but we will never be able to do that, you know, with this profession. So, you know, we just have to be able to pivot and rise up to the occasion when, you know, something sudden and dramatic happens, which was certainly the case in March. So, and, you know, is settling down, but not to a significant degree. Okay. So then the next two slides are really just to illustrate, you know, we really aren't seeing a whole lot of drama on the psychologist investigation side. So, but then you compare it on slide 7 to what's happening in the behavior analyst side. So that is very compelling. And when Ms. Michelson and I met with our budget analyst, you know, we issued a spoiler alert. You know, we anticipate there will likely be, you know, a funding request for investigative resources, because Ms. Michelson, even if we're not seeing, you know, psychologist cases rising, reducing to offset what's happening with behavior analysts, we've lost really a suitable level of capacity to deal with all of our investigations. So, I think this slide.
I would also make the statement that the investigations are getting so much more complex, you know, in so many ways with regard to insurance billing and Medicaid, and, you know, particularly on the BACB side, or the BCBA side and the LBA side. Not to say that the psychologist ones are not, they're always complex because they're dealing with, typically significant issues that have to deal with, you know, multiple, I don't even know how to summarize it, but they're complex as well. But I would say for this committee, the complexity has ramped up in the last several years. And that has also meant that Heidi and Jennifer and everyone involved in the investigation side, like, your skill set has had to continue to grow with that. And even as that's grown, it's like, you know, the sheer volume of what's coming in is just daunting. And as you pointed out, the detail it's needed is required, because, you know, you have, you know, several other people sitting on the other side of this that are board members that are, you know, often asked difficult questions that maybe there's not always a clear answer to. So getting us as much information is just helpful to the entire process. So I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, these numbers, I think, reflect the way that almost everybody on this call feels in general with regard to just this process.
And thank you for that. I've already come to this conclusion in my mind that, assuming we can make the case that, you know, we need an investigator who's dedicated to behavior analyst complaints, I believe I'm convinced it needs to be a member of this community who, you know, would have the expertise to, you know, dive into a case where there are the complexities of the nature that you were citing, Dr. Davey. I think that intuitively we can all agree or recognize that when your supply for service providers is inadequate, that's going to open the door for the potential for the kinds of practices and cases that you are mentioning. So it only stands to reason that there's going to be temptations to, you know, stretch the limited resources beyond that which is acceptable and that meets the standard of care. So as long as we're short of providers, you know, we're going to see these kinds of complaints, and they're going to come in increasingly. And then finally, the last graph. So the psychologist fund, there are two separate funds. So we've kept a separate accounting of revenue collected from psychologists, and also from behavior analyst revenue. So even with a big increase in the appropriations in recent years, the psychologist fund is held pretty steady. You know, maybe it's going to dip down $25,000, you know, but we're over 1.1 million. And then look in the meantime at how much the growth has occurred in the behavior analyst fund. So I don't have the challenge of making the case that, I have the benefit of being able to say, look, there's adequate resources. There's more than adequate resources. You know, this fund is growing, and for what purpose? Why should this fund keep growing if everything points to the need for us to be approved to allocate more resources to address these trends? It makes no sense for us to function like a savings account if we have challenges that need to be addressed. So that's the point of that slide.
Just with regard to that, right? It's like, when we kind of work on whatever your presentation is going to be, but that's the reinvestment of those dollars, right? It's the reinvestment into the system of those dollars to be able to maintain the high level of excellence that this board is put in place, that your staff has put in place. And, you know, it doesn't do us any good to have $1 million in the bank and not do a good job, you know, adjudicating claims or pushing licenses through, right? I mean, so those dollars in terms of a reinvestment, need to go in there, and the long-term, you know, return on that investment is that we're going to get better, stronger, faster at adjudication of license applications as well as complaints, and build, a top-notch team that can address that and be ready for the future. So hopefully as you get kind of prepared for your presentation, you and I will get some time together maybe to kind of workshop some of those discussion points to the legislature.
Yes, thank you. And the last slide just sort of illustrates, as a percentage, the increases in, the investigations, applications, number of licensees and so forth. So, I will break it down to a year by year kind of calculation. What I've also developed, which I didn't present to you today, but the board will see, and I'm happy to share it with the committee, is that I developed an analysis tool where we can ascertain whether our fees are appropriate relative to our costs. So that's going to inform us that our fees are too high and our costs are too low. So that's an exercise that we'll probably be looking at that maybe sometime in September. This is what I wanted you to see and, to think about in terms of formulating a recommendation to the board, that the board adopt a motion supporting certainly an increase in an increasing the appropriation so we can establish more investigative support dedicated to behavior analysts. And then we may as well, give us some latitude to ramp up on the applications and licensing side as well. So I'm ready for your questions before you, sort of deliberate and consider a motion.
I think the really fantastic thing is that you know how to speak to BCBAs. You have presented beautiful data, whether the data are something that is easy to swallow, given your limited resources, your data speak volumes. And being able to ensure that the committee and the board both have the necessary resources in order to do their jobs is something that I am comfortable making a motion for, to look into how this type of motion can improve the time frame with which we adjudicate complaints, can improve the application review process and how quickly we can get those through. I'm aware that there are recent complaints to the Ombudsman's office related to our timeliness of reviewing complaints, and I cannot help but believe that these data speak to why that is an issue. Whenever it comes to all of the investigations communication that goes back and forth between applicants and board staff, as far as, this needs to be corrected on your application and hey, did this happen or did that happen? Whether it's a question from me reaching out and saying, when did this supervisor's license go inactive, or whether it's a question from Dr. Davey saying, hey, can you reach out to get additional information from this individual? You know, all of that takes time. And I do believe with additional resources, those timeframes could be decreased. And that is of benefit to our stakeholders. No, that's okay. Like, hop in, because I was just about to make a motion.
To your point, Madam Chair, there was at least one applicant on today's agenda who was one of the individuals who complained to the Ombudsman's office. And I think I would like to believe that he came away with a new appreciation of what this process involves, for what he is responsible for as the applicant. Maybe he'll share that with his employer, who appears to be the genesis for these ombudsman, at least some of the ombudsman complaints that are coming to us, where they are being told, they're telling new hires, if your application is not reviewed within 30 days, file the complaint. So the fact of the matter is that when we are dealing with those issues, it takes Zakiya time to pull, information together for me. The portal's helpful. I can look into the portal and gather much of what I need, but, sometimes there are communications involved. The response to the complaint takes some time. None of the complaints have resulted in findings. None of them have resulted even in any recommendations. I've spent a lot of time articulating, the reforms that we are putting in place, but with every complaint, it limits the amount of time that I have to systemically develop and implement solutions. So, of course, it's everyone's right to complain. And I will do, what's required of me, as part of that process. I just think that if we were all better informed, that we would, appreciate that, I think I know how to steer us through this time. The board support is imperative in that process. I'm hearing, great support from the committee, for which I am very grateful. It also needs to be acknowledged that I'm here talking about, a request for a funding, a permission to spend increase, an appropriation increase. The fact of the matter is I'm making the ask, submitting it by September 1 to go into effect July 1 of 2024. So the solution, if we're even approved, is months and months away. The system is not such that it enables us to be flexible, be nimble. We are not afforded any room to have any redundancies. If we have a staff illness or, something were to occur, what we're already struggling to manage is exacerbated, and we don't have the resources. We have them in the bank, but we don't have the permission to use them to say, okay, we need to step up.
Is there any ability in terms of when you make the ask for that July 2024, is there any ability to ask that those funds be released earlier given our current balance? Like, is there a particular path where they backdate that approval, or they allow us to start the process of at least posting the job and being interviewed so we're ready on July of 2024? Like, how do we shrink the latency from the, I'm just going to say we're getting the approval. How do we shrink the latency from the approval to boots on the ground for you?
Yeah, that's, everything that you're describing would be so wonderful if it was an option,
if it was a thing. I'm just making stuff up. Like, I'm just thinking like how normal businesses operate. I forget, we do work for the state, so that's fair.
Yes, exactly. So I'll describe the exercise that was involved when we knew that we were going to bring, I call her the unicorn, Zakiya, on the team. So knowing that the budget bill was passed when it was, knowing what was even proposed in the bill, I could, creep toward, creating the position description questionnaire, notifying HR, I think I've got a new position, a 0.5 position coming, you know, what can you do? Can I date it this day? Can I start, you know, recruiting contingent upon, you know, the funds and so forth. So we worked very hard to enable Zakiya to begin 5 days after the beginning of the fiscal year. So, you know, I will be positioned to, you know, fill that any new position as promptly as possible, but I can only do so much. There are so many limitations that, you know, the private sector has latitude to do that we don't.
Fair enough. I appreciate that. Anything we can do to help?
Thank you.
Maybe we can post a fake job on our company websites and then just redirect them over to investigator for licensing issues. And maybe I'm happy to put it on our board.
Are you ready for a motion? You ready? So I move that we recommend to the full board to give board staff full autonomy to recruit the necessary resources to handle the increased demand for behavior animals. Is that a sufficient motion? Okay, is there a second?
I second.
Yeah.
So I made that motion. It was seconded by Dr. Rates. Mm-hmm. Shall we vote? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? Nay. The motion carries.
A lot of work went into those numbers, Heidi.
I love that the committee appreciates them. I love data too. So our thinking's very aligned. So thanks for that feedback.
Stop looking at the data now. And we're going to move on to agenda item number 10. Agenda item number 10 is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding proposed committee operating modifications. Back to you, Ms. Pakanon.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I think that, jump back to my agenda, I may ask to reorder this a little bit, the items under 10. If we could maybe do a last, because I think that item 9, what we just discussed, is a pretty good segue to really 10B and 10, certainly 10B. Can we start there? Okay, so what I'm attempting, again, some of the, you know, very same data, right? But what I'm attempting to address here is really establishing for the record that we are very cognizant that what we're dealing with here in terms of volume has affected our application processing performance. It's, again, same reasons. We only have so many hours. We only have so many dollars. You know, we only have so much capacity. So really at the bottom of your memorandum, that's where, you know, I really speak to the spoiler alert I just gave you about the ombudsman's complaints that we were dealing with. What I will acknowledge, and it needs to be acknowledged. We know that we are violating administrative processing timeframes. We own that. It is absolutely an issue. So what that means is that the application timeframe of 30 days is a tight window of time with which to process such a big volume of applications. I do want to explain that, however, there is a whole lot of misconstruing about how the timeframes work. And I understand why. It totally makes sense. You see the language in the rule, you see a table, and it says, oh, you know, someone should be looking at my application in 30 days. What isn't understood is that who's looking at your application, which is administrative, so it's staff. And what also isn't understood is that there's a dynamic where once the staff issues a deficiency letter, the time frame clock starts. So the way I think of it is that Your team has run out of timeouts. It is third down. You're behind by two. You need to get the field goal unit on the field to kick the field goal. So the call is you spike the ball because you need to stop the clock. And so that's how that function effectively works. But when you don't even have the time to issue the deficiency letter to stop that clock, we're going to go past that very stingy, I'll call it 30 days. It's a known issue. So again, my job is to look for systemic solutions. And I've had some conversations with Ms. Galvin, lots of conversations with staff. They're really tired of my brainstorming, particularly the wackier ideas. But I do feel that we are super close to a solution that's pretty automated. So we can get to the point where we are able to spike the ball. We are able to issue those deficiency letters. So at least our numbers will improve. I did look at our numbers for what we have so far, and we're about at 43 days as an average. So clearly that exceeds the 30-day time frame. We want to do much, much better, and we're working on that. I will articulate very clearly, if we violate administrative timeframes, there are no consequences, adverse consequences. So, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, we lose our funding, or it doesn't mean that, you know, we get, you know, any sort of reprimand or anything of that nature. We don't want to be doing this, of course. We don't want to be in this position. We want to move applications forward to the committee as expeditiously as we possibly can. So we don't relish this this fact, this data. I don't have anything better for you other than what I've illustrated in your memorandum at the bottom. So what our overall time frames, our data is complete in the system to the extent that I could look at our overall time frames. And so, you know, in quarter one, we were at 44 days from application issuance, application receipt to the board's decision. Q2, pretty close to that too. Clearly something happened in Q3, which was volume increase. And then I would also say the shift to the new system, you know, slowed down our efficiency. We knew that. We were prepared for that. You know, we had new workflows to figure out. Some we tried and they weren't super effective. So we pivoted and tried something else, and we're getting better and better and better. But that Q3 value, I wish I had Q4, but we're not finished collecting that data quite yet. But knowing that the substantive review timeframe, which is the second piece of the overall timeframe, so admin timeframe plus substantive equals, overall substantive timeframes, we see almost no fluctuation, almost no variation, because when an application is complete, we're getting it to the committee and the board, you know, as soon as possible. So the inflation in those numbers are that's explained by increases in the administrative processing timeframe. That's a fact. I will make a comment about the substantive review timeframe. That is a curiously generous 90 days. Our averages are usually around 30 days. So it seems that we didn't conceive of, or maybe they made sense once upon a time, but our administrative timeframe is too short. Our substantive review timeframe is absurdly long. We are not violating any overall timeframes. We are complying with that 120-day total consistently with no exceptions. There are consequences to the agency for violating an overall timeframe. We lost an application and it took more than 120 days total, we refund the applicant's fee. That's the consequence. So that's the only consequence of any of this, except for the fact we're getting ombudsman's complaints. Z is fielding, you know, questions and concerns constantly, which distracts her from application processing. So that's why on the page 4 of the memorandum, I've, to this point, I've been able to only carve out the time to illustrate how the timeframes work so that we don't have Z getting, you know, scolded or questioned by anyone if it's day 31 and, you know, their application is still open. So we hope that people pay attention to this and understand better, you know, how the timeframes operate. But I'm going to do better by recording a webinar that I think will hopefully, you know, go farther in terms of illustrating this point so that it isn't misconstrued. So many of the complaints that I think we've received so far and that we'll continue to receive, they're all about that. Why has it been 30 days and the board hasn't seen my application or the committee hasn't seen my application? So I've spent an inordinate amount of time, you know, trying to look for solutions here. The most significant one, again, being once we have a more automated way to say you're deficient and we stop the clock, then, you know, we'll be able to at least say, no, we're not violating the administrative timeframes. Did any of that make sense?
That makes sense, yes.
Okay. Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Thanks. Thank you for putting this together, in this case example together. I too, in hindsight, wish that we would have put perhaps this conversation earlier in the agenda when we had, you know, 30 listening ears. I get a little bit frustrated in that I understand from a consumer standpoint, like we are in need of professionals serving the community. But there was once upon a time where, you know, you had 2 test periods a year. So you could test in March or you could test in November. And we won't even talk about what it was like with Dr. Davy testing, but there was a significant amount of time where there were 2 test periods and you could have finished your hours and your schooling in May and not even be eligible to sit for the test until November. And then you had 45 days, business days, and think of November, you've got Christmas and Thanksgiving and all the other fun holidays, but 45 business days to wait for a response. And at one point those responses used to come via mail. So it was 45 days plus whatever the mail transaction was. And then, you know, for the licensure state, then you had to, that would start your process for getting all of your stuff together to send in for licensure. And that, you know, that wasn't automated. So, and I get that it's part of the times and I get that that's all of the things, but I think it's frustrating that that there isn't some compassion and empathy from applicants related to what really goes into this process. And again, for those of us who have been certified for quite some time, like you, or if you were employing other people, like we would be so excited that people finish their hours just to know that they wouldn't be able to independently practice for almost an entire year. And that was just a known thing. So the fact that in many cases prior to, you know, the spike in March, you guys were getting things to us 30, 40, you know, 50 days out, like that is incredible, because that wasn't, and the fact that now the test is on demand, you know, they can go and take the test when they're ready. Like there were so many things that weren't in place. So I just wanted to note for the record, again, kind of how frustrating that is. And I do think that we are coming up against kind of a workforce that is used to instant gratification. You know, something happens on an app my husband and I talk about this all the time of like what you see on TV about how they process crimes is not what really happens. So when people are like, what do you mean? Why can't you just send in this DNA test? And they're like, well, because it takes months. I think we're just kind of butting up against that. And I know the association jumped off it as well, but I wish that there was just a way for folks to just continue to encourage applicants to have a little bit of compassion around this and to understand like everybody is doing their best. And on that note, I wanted to thank you, Ms. Pacanon, and Ms. Malice, because I felt so overwhelmed reviewing applications, and I couldn't even begin this week, and I couldn't even begin imagining like what would go into even having to put all of those things together. So thank you guys for that. And thank you guys for putting together this data. And I think the committee, and I think even the board, is going to stand by you guys in defense of you guys are doing a phenomenal job. And hopefully those folks that, or their employers that are pushing like this needs to be done or else, that you know, they can learn to appreciate what the process really is and have a little bit of compassion and empathy for what is going on.
Thank you for that so much. And, you know, Zakiya is maybe a little bashful to sort of jump in with these points, but I think she's making some important ones to me privately. And, you know, I'm going to put them out there. You know, we need to acknowledge that, you know, in 30 hours or 30 days, excuse me, that's only, you know, in quantifiable terms, that's only 100 hours. So it really isn't, you know, it's not as though we can say, okay, you know, go ahead and work some overtime, or, you know, you need to put in that, you know, this is a 12-hour day today, you know, kind of thing. We don't have that latitude. We have restrictions. And there's also, and I'll put this in my script when I do the webinar, because I think this is really important. Applicants, they will assume that just because all the documents are received, that their file is complete. It can't be considered complete until Zakiya looks through it and ascertains whether there is still substance missing. I mean, you guys saw applications today where, you know, they were sent to you with the on the basis of they appear to be complete, and then, you know, the substantive review finds that's not necessarily the case. So there is that, and we're still sort of, you know, challenged by there are so many components to an application. Much of it is applicant supplied. An enormous amount is sourced from other resources. And so, you know, just the sheer assembly of that, sure, you know, the portal creates new opportunities. It also creates new challenges, but we're never going to get away from the fact that, you know, the sourcing, the gathering, the compiling, the reviewing of, you know, all of that documentation is enormous. If I could, you know, snap my fingers tomorrow, I would say, you know, give us 90 days in administrative review timeframe. That's not likely to happen. We would have to revise rules, and I'm not sure that, you know, we would have a sympathetic audience for that. So we just have to figure out how to do better. Keep working on it. Get more resources. So that to me isn't necessarily an action item, but, you know, hopefully what I'm hearing is that, you know, I'm hearing the support, I'm hearing the committee say, you know, you're behind us, agree with the solutions that we're putting in place. If you have just, you know, an epiphany for something that, you know, I'm not thinking of that we need to develop and implement, believe me, I'm all ears, but this is my obsessive focus. At least right now, to, you know, reform what we can.
Sure, you've already thought of this. So if you have, I'm sorry. But do we have to pay interns? I know, like at Behavior Analytic Agency, like interns are paid, right? Mm-hmm. Do we have the funds to pay for an intern? Do interns work for free? Could we get interns to support the actual process of the investigations? Like, is that like a faster avenue before we get to the point of July 2024? I know you've mentioned interns before, but I don't know what their bandwidth was.
Right. No, it's an interesting idea. I guess my philosophy about interns has, I sort of have a vision for them, which is, you know, really research focus, you know, an opportunity for them to apply what they've learned, you know, in terms of, so they study compliance and they study regulation in healthcare. So, for whatever reason, they decide they want to be like me when they grow up and, you know, work in this kind of world. So great for them. What I don't want us to be tempted to do, though, is to supplant, you know, our staffing deficit with this resource, because it would be very hard to justify how Zakiya, you know, her salary is this, her benefits are this. And this free intern, which is supplied to us, you know, through ASU, sure, they're getting credit, but I think that there are, I suspect that there are, if not state personnel preclusions, there may even be labor law considerations that play a role into this. And this is getting into an area where that's way in over my head. You know, maybe there's still some creative ways to leverage, you know, I love interns. So when Jennifer lets me have one, you know, I'm always looking for ways to, you know, how do we tap into this eager young mind who is benefiting from, you know, really contemporary education, the benefit of a degree that I didn't get to tap into, you know, how can they find, you know, some solutions that we're not yet aware of. I'm just a little reticent to leverage them in the way that, you know, that we could run afoul of laws.
Well, I'm sure you're really eager to talk about agenda item 10A then, as we have just presented all of this data and all of these concerns.
Yes, and we could go either one, or we could come back to A. What, you know, we know that the committee has asked for, you know, some time on an agenda to talk about, you know, how to make meetings, you know, shorter, more efficient, more manageable for you, because, you know, it's not lost on us, you are volunteers. And so, you know, what you were tapped to do when you were appointed and what you're doing right here, right now, it's changed a lot, right? It's evolved a lot. So staff has done some brainstorming. One of the challenges that we're always going to have to deal with, as long as this committee is a committee of the board, which doesn't give you as much latitude as if you were an independent board, there I said it, but it forces the committee to sort of have to adhere to, I call it choreography because I can't come up with a better term, but we really have to chink in the committee's work in between other meetings and other deadlines, especially. So what we can't do is create a situation where the committee meetings get too close to CSC because of our single investigator. We need to ensure that we, you know, maintain this spatial relationship in time between, you know, the committee's work and the board's work. So it really restricts us. When we really thought about this, you know, in terms of that timing and that sequence and that spatiality, we don't have a whole lot of room to shift meetings. What the two ideas that we've come up with that we think are plausible based on what we have here now and today is that we could ask ARC to shift to Application Review Committee to shift to Thursday. They meet at 7:30 quite intentionally because that committee decided years ago, we want an early start to the day so it doesn't cut too much into our work day. So often they're done by 8, 8:15, 8:30. So if we then, if it's palatable to the committee, we can shift your Friday mornings. You get to keep Friday and we shift it to 7:30. I know one of you is a night owl, so this may not be palatable, but at least what it does too, it serves the same purpose. It cuts into your work day a little less. The only other possible solution, and this would have to be implemented, I think, a few months from now, what we could do is we could, more immediately, I think what we could do is we could do a meeting split, where there would be one meeting that would be, you know, earlier than the CBA's, than when it's scheduled now, if that makes sense. So that meeting could be dedicated to application review only. All that would do is create a situation where your meetings are shorter. You're in meetings for a month, the same amount of time, but it splits the time into two, maybe more manageable meetings. But the applicants would then be told, okay, well, the committee did their part. Now you have to wait until the next board agenda, which is 3 weeks away, 2.5 weeks away, 2 weeks away. So that's not really an advantage to applicants necessarily. It would only present maybe some advantage to the committee. So the other variation to that idea, which again is some months away, would be two meetings a month for application reviews, a short one and then a longer one. That does create more work for board staff. I mean, there's no way of getting around that to schedule, you know, two meetings. And that would have to be done in such a way that the whole year's calendar is planned out in advance because of the time involved in saying, hey, you know, for your second meeting this month, where we're only looking at applications, what's good for you? Here's your poll kind of thing. So honestly, of all of those options, which are limited, we acknowledge that, maybe the first one that I described, which is convincing ARC to shift a day, freeing you up to start, you know, your Friday meetings earlier. We know we could probably implement that one fairly soon, maybe a month or two down the road, 2 months. We can revisit this conversation once we have a once we're more staffed up. So that's a long time from now, if we even are successful in making that case. But we could have a CSC in effect that wouldn't task Jennifer, because the investigator that's dedicated to the behavior analysts would be tasked with that meeting. So it wouldn't, you know, sort of pull her in too many directions while she's also trying to get cases done for the psychologist CSC. So I don't know if there are any reactions to these.
You just have to keep looking at, I mean, again, you have to balance your, I mean, having these Fridays, like, you know, those that are on the board, like also it's pretty much two Fridays that I have to block out, you know, a month. And that's a significant amount of time. Like right now I'm getting, my wife is blowing up my text messages of like, when the hell are you going to be done? We're supposed to be leaving town. And I'm like, man, whatever. And so she's flexible. My employer, who knows, like they, you know, they value the time I spend here. And so that's okay. But I think we just need to keep looking at it, Heidi. And then when the resources align, they align. Like we can't force it now. It's going to create more headaches, more work, more disjointedness, more administrative issues. Like, I don't want to force it, but I just think we need to continue to visit it. And, you know, I thought today we did a really good job of getting through the applications. Thank goodness there were very few that had, you know, additional information. I thought, you know, as we get, you know, we're getting much more fluent at kind of going through those and hitting the highlights. And, you know, not every single case review needs to take 20 minutes. They can, you know, the ones that are aligned can go rather quickly. So I just think we just need to keep looking at it. And if solutions, you know, we see other boards that have solutions or you identify solutions, just please share with us. That's all I ask.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we brainstorm on this topic more frequently than I think we want to confess to. You know, we want to bring relief to all concerned. And if we had the perfect solution in our back pockets, we would have pulled it out by now for sure.
Well, so. I definitely support the idea, if other committee members do, of starting a little bit earlier during the day. I definitely feel the duration of these meetings with my, you know, my day job. So if at all possible, and other individual committee members would agree to starting earlier, I do support that idea.
Maybe you could just send out a kind of a poll of like what time's the earliest that the group could start and see if that, you know, if everybody, even if it's 30 minutes or an hour earlier, whatever it is.
Yes.
I know it's not here. And then Dr. Davis Wilson, I'm not sure your time frame on things. So yeah, I think that's probably a good question to just ask us.
Okay. Let's target the August meeting as, you know, the first possible meeting that we could consider a time shift. And again, it's sort of predicated on ARC cooperating. So, but we outnumber them. So we may be able to make a successful case there. And it's not uncommon for ARC to have to shift a day or two, you know, just based on their own schedules. So not a huge ask of them.
I'll just shift my bedtime to 8:30 a.m.
Oh, thank you for taking one for the team, Dr. Davis Wilson.
Honestly, I'm not going to have any choice come August. My husband's going back on Graves, so someone has to get up and get the kids to school. So I will be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed early in the morning. Excellent. Kicking or screaming, I'll be there.
Very good. So the last portion of this agenda item is brainstorming strategies to mitigate unforced applicant or verifiers errors. And I've got nothing for you. So what do we do? How do we troubleshoot this?
It's an ASIABA opportunity for education surrounding this. I think that it is definitely something that is interest to employers who want their newly certified BCBAs to be able to bill as soon as possible. How do you get your application through as quickly as possible? What is the education that we could provide surrounding preventing errors from happening in the first place so that there isn't that increased administrative review times that are there? Like, is that something we could suggest to ASIABA, and perhaps you could be a guest speaker, Ms. Packinen?
Yeah. So along those lines, what maybe I should have, you know, I guess spoke to this before now, but recently I so appreciated that ASIABA asked me to do a workshop on the new portal. And so in doing so, they recorded it. They can send it to the whole world as far as I'm concerned. But when I did this demonstration, I pointed out specific instances where applicants frequently trip up. So, you know, if anyone is sort of paying attention to that resource or, you know, they take away from that resource, oh, okay, I better check my dates really carefully. You know, that I'm hoping maybe that has, you know, a long-term, you know, even if it's a minimal effect, if it, you know, if two applicants a month take that to heart, then that's some sort of a gain, right? What I was sort of naive for, as we were sort of, you know, waiting for the portal to be finished, I really thought that, oh my gosh, you know, it's going to mitigate so many errors. It's going to be glorious. That's somewhat true. And there are some things that the portal prevents certain errors, but the discrepancies really come in the form of, well, it's still possible for applicants to make some errors with dates, but the discrepancies, as we saw today, if an applicant presents one piece of information and with a supervisor presents is a departure from that, there's no way to control for that. Even the, you know, the AI that exists or will exist someday, I don't even know how we would leverage that. So there's only so much we can do. So it's education. I think that's what it all comes back to. Education and taking opportunities to mentor. So that's really what I wanted to the committee to, I guess, discuss with respect to this agenda item. I don't have anything additional. Questions? Thoughts? Well, thank you for all the support, and I'll make sure the board gets the action item, the recommendation to let me ask for $1 million to spend to solve all of our problems.
Well, the cool thing is we've got them, right?
Yeah, we do.
We've got $1 million. Like, that's
exactly. Okay.
All right. Thanks. Agenda item number 11. And just in case you're not finished talking, Heidi, this one's back to you again. Discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recent updates from the Behavior Analyst Certification Board.
I will be mercifully short. Just two items. The BACB issued to the regulatory authorities and advisory statements around the treatment, a possible treatment model that would include a client child's parents as the registered RBT. And, you know, this of course is something that, you know, this committee is astutely aware of. So I don't know if that requires any more than an acknowledgement that, you know, we appreciate that the BACB is, you know, issuing this guidance, you know, for our benefit. And then, as you were notified, the advisory that was issued to the world of BCBAs that this committee thoughtfully, you know, crafted, and the board was very, you know, entirely supportive of. So that did finally get issued. It's precipitated no questions or
to you. No questions, yeah.
No questions to you.
To me. Yeah, no one has said, so what if this is happening, or what if I do this? Which, of course, we can't answer those questions. But maybe if it has people talking in your community, that isn't necessarily a bad thing. So that's all I have on that item.
Is anyone here getting continuing education credit for this meeting? You, Diana?
Don't we all need it? Don't you want it?
I mean, I didn't know if Ms. Malice needed to offer another code word if anyone was.
I think we're good.
Get it, because everyone has dropped off.
But she prepared one. Maybe it's worth hearing.
Why not? Let's hear it. It's exciting.
Okay. The next code word is parade. Parade.
Okay. Dr. Davis Wilson.
Yeah, I just wanted to make just kind of a brief comment about the BACB's guidance on the parent implementation model. You know, I'm interested to see if there is going to be additional guidance around parents as agency owners. And then parents as as BCBAs receiving services at their at the same place of employment. I think, and there's, you know, there's different levels. There's BCBA business owners that are also parents who may have children getting services. There's non-BCBA business owners that may have children getting services at same agencies. There are BCBAs that work for an agency that may not be the owner, but may be in various supervisory roles that may also have a child or a family member in need of services. Because when you really dive into what the BACB's guidance is, I mean, the crux of it is those personal and professional boundaries need to be drawn. And so I would be interested to know or inquire or hear from them as to how they're going to take this guidance that they're providing and kind of crosswalk it to the other scenarios that that we continue to face as a field, especially in the evolution of things. Many years ago, there wasn't enough providers to go around. So obviously the right to effective treatment was a different conversation, but now that seems to have shifted. And so I just am going to be curious to follow how they take the stance that they have substantiated here in this scenario and interpret the other various types of cases that we could be seeing.
Any other questions or comments on agenda item number 11? Okay. We'll move on to agenda item number 12, which is new agenda items for future meetings. I know that we had some discussion a little bit earlier about some new agenda items. Now's the time.
Madam Chair, I heard that the committee wants to have a focused discussion about the practice authorization that is the telehealth registry.
I did hear that too, Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Yeah, and I would like to, whether it's that we have a conversation and then circle back to the BACB or we invite the BACB to engage in the conversation, but I would like to kind of review what steps they're now taking. I know what we saw today was years ago, what steps they're now taking to ensure that there is proper notification across jurisdictions. I know that everything kind of leaves it on to the applicant to report that, but because they're not using the national database, and you know, they have different processes, I would be interested to hear maybe perhaps on their lessons learned over the last couple of years as to what they are going to do to protect consumers when these cross state issues are coming up.
Dr. Davey.
No, I gotta go.
You unmuted.
I gotta go.
Okay, no further agenda items. 13 is adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion has been made to adjourn. It has been seconded. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed, nay. Motion carries. Adios. The meeting is adjourned at 1:56 p.m.
Dr. Rates, can you stay for 10 seconds?
Good job, Madam Chair.
I can.
Thank you.